Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back to another edition of Leave It in the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chin. Happy New Year's to everyone out there. I hope you guys had an excellent, fun New Year's Eve that led into a New Year's Day, 2013, over here on Leave It in the Ring. We got a stacked show for everybody. We have Orlando Salido. We have Fernando Guerrero. We got Jose Benavides Jr., And who else do we have going on, man?
Gabriel Rosado.
Rosado, yeah. We have him coming through. He's going to be facing Gennady Golovkin. So a lot of stuff to talk about in boxing, a lot of guests to have on here to interview to start off the new year. I've been reading a couple of tweets throughout the whole day and throughout yesterday as well. You know, I guess one of the big stories out there, I don't know how much of truth is there to this story, but signs of Parkinson for Manny Pacquiao. I'm like, wow, man, like really, like if there's no truth to that, I'm just, why are we reaching for?
Did you read it?
I didn't read it. I just looked at it.
I find it incredibly irresponsible, dude. They're not his doctors. They're people kind of observing him on, you know, seeing him in interviews is what it seemed like. It was a translated version that I read. But, yeah, no, it was just people trying to get clicks, man. I found it to be kind of offensive. I mean, not that I'm this big Pacquiao guy or whatever, like people try to accuse me, but just anybody. I mean, that's just a harsh thing to say about somebody, especially when it's not their doctor being quoted. His doctor wouldn't be quoted because of the doctor-client privilege. It's irresponsible. It's a terrible thing to write. That's how I looked at it.
Absolutely, you know, and that's just the thing. I mean, you're reaching to get clicks. You're reaching to – I mean, first off, I mean, where would you even get – I mean, he gets knocked out, and all of a sudden he's got – there's something wrong with him. He's got Parkinson. I mean, the whole he's done that for years. You know what I mean? There's no sign there. That's the way he talks. He takes a while to – get a sentence out. It takes a minute or so to get a word out, especially if you're speaking to him in English. You know, it takes him some time. Even when he's speaking in his own native tongue, it takes him some time to kind of soak in whatever question you're giving to him. And you know, he processes it and then he releases whatever thought comes into his mind and stuff. So I just thought that was kind of out there. That's why I didn't read too much into it. I was going to wait to see if there was any official from, like, Top Rank or anybody from the Pacquiao camp. I haven't. So that's why I didn't really fall too much into that. Austin Trout getting arrested this past weekend, accused of being drunk, but he was released. It looks like the charges are going to be dropped, but he was in New Mexico, right? And I guess
he was at a taco stand at like 4:30 in the morning, like a lot of us probably were. Not at that taco stand, but many across the land or places you eat after you party all night. But apparently he wasn't drinking and he was trying to break up a fight in the next booth. And when the cops came, somebody implicated him as one of the people involved, and the cops allegedly smelled alcohol. He asked for a breathalyzer, according to one report. It was turned down. I'm not sure if that's confirmed. But, it seems like it's all going to be dropped, and that reports that he was partying like a rock star at a taco stand at 4:30, or sounds like he was just being classy Austin Trout, as usual, getting involved, where he didn't really need to be, but probably where he was wanted or needed, you know, stopping a fight at 4:30 in the morning. People get crazy on that night in particular.
Especially, yeah, especially any given night after midnight, you know, people coming out of the nightclubs and, you know, feeling a little brave and supermanish. You know, how we all get when we get a little bit of fire water in our system. And Austin Trout, who's a world champion, stepped in and saved the day. And at the same time, he had to suffer the consequences when you're being the good guy. So good thing that nothing happened to him, though, other than, you know, what did happen.
It's one of those things, you know how this is, dude. I mean, after the bar, you're going to do one of two Fs. And if you're not doing the good one, you're going to go do the bad one. You're going to end up getting in a fight. I think that's – I don't know what that's the situation, but that's how usually people end up. Either you're at a taco stand lamenting what could have happened and you find a reason to just get angry and go crazy, or, you're home with your lady.
Yeah.
That's
true, man.
Even if she's lady of the night, you know.
A blown up lady of the night. Either one, though, you're home. With
whatever works.
David Chen is running a little late, so be patient. He'll be jumping in and receiving everybody's call in a private chat room. Get your name and what discussion you want to talk about here on Leaving the Ring. But for right now, because we got a bunch of calls that are on the switchboard, I'm just going to call out your area code and then tell me what you want to talk about here on Leaving the Ring before we start rolling into the interviews that we have scheduled for today. Let's go with the area code 860. Who am I speaking to? And you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's CT.
What's up, CT? How you doing, brother?
What's up, man? Good. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you guys, too. How was your New Year's?
Good. Good and crazy.
Yeah. Pretty ridiculous. Yeah.
I'm still recuperating. Let me put it that way. I'm still recovering from New Year's Eve, so.
Yeah. No, it was awesome. I had a great time. I can't talk about it at all on the radio.
Yeah, I said a question about Austin Trout. I wasn't sure, but is he scheduled to fight Canelo in May or no?
It hasn't been. What I've heard, I don't know what Gabriel's heard yet, but what I've heard, it's not a definite yet. It's something that's been thrown out. I think if anything, it's just getting thrown out there to see the reaction and get the feedback from it, but it's not a solid thing. You know, at the end of the day, Canelo's a promoter, and I think a lot of people need to understand that, because they're now trying to point the finger the way, they were doing it to Top Rank with Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, is that Golden Boy doesn't want to see Canelo take on a big test or a hard test, or to see whether or not he belongs in that elite level. It really boils down to Alvarez at this moment as a promoter. What does he want to do? Is Austin Trout in his radar, especially being there live and seeing what his capabilities and seeing that he's a big 154 and he's got the people on his side in terms of, here's the thought. If he's looking for a lucrative fight, a very lucrative fight, obviously Austin Trout's an American and American fighters, especially American black fighters, they don't bring that big crowd anymore like they did in the 80s. It's all about establishing him and marketing him correctly. But with that Cotto fight, we have to admit, a lot of fans tuned, watched the Showtime fight, and then were turned on to him. And I've seen a lot of more followers and a lot more people reaching out to Austin Trout, and he's doing what he's supposed to do after a win, which is promote himself. And I'm seeing he's going to Arizona, he's going to, New Mexico, and he's doing all the right things. The meet and greet is all the right things, lucrative, we'll go back to that word lucrative, that's exactly what Austin's trying to, make sure that he's marketing himself as a lucrative draw to Canelo Alvarez. Now, is he that big money draw that Miguel Cotto would bring? No. But he does bring a lot of change and a lot of risk. So it's really up to Canelo on whether or not he wants to pursue it. And I think that's what we're waiting on, is whether or not he sees it lucrative enough. Even though he's getting, Trout's getting more followers on Twitter and Facebook and more people are talking about this big potential fight between those two. It's really up to Canelo to sit down and go, do I really want to go after this American fighter that upset it, the guy that I was supposed to beat and was supposed to take me to the next level in terms of household name? That's something that he's got to really sit back and think about. And he's a smart kid. I'm not sure if he's going to really – I don't think he's going to really sink his teeth into that one, Gabriel.
I think it's one of those cases of the fighter – I think Canelo's ready. I think he wants to – I don't know if he's ready for Trout, but I think he wants to test the waters. And it's interesting that – after Trout versus Delvin Rodriguez last year, Richard Schaefer sat in front of the media and said, now we begin Canelo's run to unify all the belts. This is what's going to happen next. And it doesn't sound like that's what's happening next.
No.
Steve Kim earlier kind of tweeted, that Schaefer was kind of mum on what was really going on with May 4th, but he kind of threw a few things out. But that fight is not, you know, we don't know yet at this point if that's going to happen. I think it's a matter of if Canelo wants to try it, you know, Trout and beat his brother for that belt that he has. And I think that he would like to get some revenge there.
And that's a good storyline, too, to tell you.
I think it's a great storyline. But, you know, Schaefer's going to Schaefer, and they got their own network now. They can kind of call their own shots. It's going to be interesting to see if Canelo stays happy, because he is his own promoter. He's very aware of how much of a star he actually is. And he was a pretty big draw and a star before he ever got to Golden Boy. So I'm curious to see if he thinks that this is the best path for his career when that contract comes up. He's going to have some leverage. And, you know, yeah. If you're a free agent in his position, if you don't test the waters, you're stupid.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
The thing I was thinking of is, you know, if he did it with Lopez, you know, how Lopez beat Ortiz, why not do it with Trout? You know what I mean? Just, you know, if he wants to be compared to De La Hoya the way he is compared, you know, from De La Hoya, he has to take this type of fight, you know. You know, fight the best fighters out there, and Trout's a dangerous fight for him. He's one of those fighters you can't really look good against, and I think Canelo knows that. But if he wants to be a top-level fighter, you know, he's got to take on these type of challenges. And I think if he does go through with the fight, I give him a lot of credit. I mean, he'll prove that he's beaten, you know, if he does beat Trout, he'll prove that he's one of the best 154-pounders out there.
Without question, immediately. Immediately, if he beats Trout, you have to say that he just earned his stripes.
Yeah.
He's had the belt. He's defended it. He hasn't screwed up. And I think Victor Ortiz or, you know, guys that, you know, like, if you look at that WBC welterweight belt, I mean, Andre Berto ended up defending it, but there's a lot of people before that it kind of changed hands. Nobody really was able to hold on to it. It's not easy to get a belt and keep it. And Canelo has kept it. I know people will say, well, they've thrown easy fights at him, but you still have to win the fights. You still have to do what you got to do. And I think even just the way he handled Josecito Lopez, yeah, he was still, you know, too big for him, but Josecito's a solid fighter, and he just didn't look like he could handle what Canelo brought to the table. If he can take that and do that with Austin Trout, even if he doesn't dominate him, but he just beats him, say, 7-5, yeah, you got to give it to him. You really do. You know, I want to see the fight. I don't know what Golden Boy does. It'll be interesting. Yeah.
If I could say one more thing, I have to commend Gabriel Rosado. I heard that he didn't want to cash weight now, and he's going to fight Golovkin at 160. Is it for the title now or not?
Well, we're going to get all the details in a bit because he's actually going to be on in about 3 minutes. So we should be able to answer that question and many others regarding that fight.
I think he's a live underdog, to tell you the truth.
I think so, too. Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks, CT. We're going to put you back on hold, brother.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
In the world of Twitter, man, you always get to see some of the fun stuff. And, I know I'm not that active on Twitter. I don't get in big conversations. And, you know, and some people actually hit me up and say, Dave, you need to be more social on Facebook and on Twitter. It's really hard for me, man, to get a friendship over that. But I do like to see the arguments and debates and, you know, things stirred up with, like, Tyson Fury, for instance. Tyson Fury on Twitter has been pretty known and of a guy that likes to talk a lot of trash. And calling out the Klitschkos, saying that they're afraid of him, and it led down to him finally calling out a UFC heavyweight Mexican-American fighter by the name of Cain Velasquez. I did reach out to his promoter, and they were going to get back to me, hopefully try to get Tyson Fury and find out why, even if it's even possible that they can kind of fathom that up and make it happen. My 2 cents about it is that the publicity stunt is always good to get you the big fight that you're looking for. It attracts more people, and it makes your name relevant out there, especially for the Klitschkos. Here's the thing, though, is whenever you've ever known the Klitschkos to duck a fighter, to avoid a fighter, they pretty much have been taking everybody from prospect to old champion and has been willing to get in there and fight them and stuff, you know. Tyson Fury, just in my opinion, it's just got to stay a little patient, you know. That circle is coming back around in terms of getting another name for the Klitschkos.
I don't know. I like a guy that, you know, as much as, like, I've got, or Peter Quillin has issues with me and we kind of go back and forth, I always liked the fact that he put himself out there when nobody else was really doing it. Hey, I'll fight Sergio Martinez. I, you know, by talking about it, he kind of put his thoughts into action, and eventually is now holding a belt. I don't know if that's going to move him closer to fighting Martinez, but he kind of put his, you know, what he wanted out there, and by doing that, he kind of moved towards it. I respect that, you know, as much as whatever happened between us is between us, but I respect that game. Whereas with Tyson Fury, I think that's what I want my guy to say. You know, and he's not my guy, but, you know, if I'm a manager or I'm a trainer, I want my fighter to say, yeah, I want to fight this guy, I want to fight that guy, and I'm moving towards that. I think it's the right thing, and it kind of does put you out there a little bit. It exposes you a little bit. But I think we all kind of know the deal with a Fury, that he's still developing. You know, I'd like to see him and maybe David Price eventually, or Helenius. All these guys, you know, again, you know, these guys all need to get in the mix. You know, I think, I don't know, you know, I don't want to exclude the Klitschkos, but I think there's so much better fights.
I think they
fights.
Need to. I, you know,
yeah, there's better fights to be made
that.
With all these guys that, you know, besides the Klitschkos. I know they're the cash cow, but.
And
yeah.
You know what? We've talked about that. I mentioned it back when Seth Mitchell came on to the show. You know, when he wasn't a big name yet, you know, he didn't have the HBO date or anything like that. He's getting his rematch from his loss, his past loss. But that was one of the things that I mentioned, is that I really would like to see the heavyweights now just kind of concentrate on who's up on the up and coming rather than the Klitschkos. Because by the time they're ready, by the time they're seasoned, and by the time they can really put their names in, with Vladimir or Vitaly, I really think those guys are going to be on the retirement bench, you know? And that's what they should really look at, is that these guys don't have much more or much longer. Even if they do challenge them and fight them and lose, I still think that those names are valuable enough to stick around, because the other heavyweights are going to make it interesting. And I've said this before. As soon as the Klitschkos disappear, the heavyweights are going to be a little bit more exciting, a little bit more fun, because we're going to see some better matchups there, just because of the fact that I don't see the Klitschkos being on people's so-called pound-for-pound list, but if there was, they're on the top of that list, in my opinion. You know, they're just one of the best fighters right now of our generation.
I think that they should be considered pound-for-pound. Isn't pound-for-pound mean, all things being equal, this style would beat that style? That's really what it is. Now we've turned it into some sort of bizarre race where you got to, you know, adjust things each fight. I mean, Adrian Broner's number 5 on the ring pound-for-pound list. This is exactly why I don't have one, because I don't believe in Santa Claus either. I try to tend to stay away from imaginary things. But to me, the Klitschkos, both of them are two guys that really understand themselves in terms of style. Though they couldn't be more different. I mean, Vitaly is one of those kind of originals that you couldn't really duplicate his style if you tried. He really understands himself, and it makes him completely awkward because he doesn't try to be anything other than true to his nature. And Klitschko, Vladimir, has slowly evolved, some would say devolved, from a super offensive machine to something that's a little more conservative, but still, it really gets the job done. I mean, I was talking to Mark Breland about the Klitschkos, and he was talking about Vladimir in particular. He's like, look at what he does. Everything that he does is kind of what you learn in boxing 101. He throws a nice straight jab that he puts power behind. He can hook off of it, which is kind of a basic move. He throws a straight right hand. Occasionally he does the uppercut, but you don't see any shoulder rolls. You don't see him like slipping and dodging punches. It's just real basic block defense. But it's highly, highly effective. I would challenge anybody. Maybe their size is what gives them that advantage, but that's kind of like saying, well, take away Floyd's speed, or I think his greatest attribute is his intelligence. Take that away. Well, then he becomes a completely different fighter. It's like saying, you know, well, Zab Judah all of a sudden doesn't have power. Well, he'd be completely different. So I think just the pound for pound idea is just the basic point is it's completely ridiculous. But at the same time, those guys should be recognized as two of the greatest fighters in the world because of their dominance. They've cleaned out their division. What else are they going to do but be what they are? They're also huge cash cows. They
absolutely
do very, very well. They sell massive tickets. They do great ratings. There's not a lot of complaints there. I think, you know, I've always said this, if there were any other ethnicity, if there were two brothers from Brooklyn or there were two Mexican brothers, people would probably celebrate them as gods, but they're two giant Ukrainians, so we just don't really get that excited about them. But back to your original point, I want to see all the other heavyweights get into the mix. I want to see Price Helenius. I wouldn't even see Chisora kind of, you know, throw around into the mix still. I think he's a viable, fun heavyweight. Everything besides the Klitschkos is kind of an exciting fight, bottom line.
Hmm. Yeah,
Do we have Rosado? I'm trying to communicate with his publicist and see what number they're calling in so we don't have our our David Chen screening everything.
Yeah, he's not. Dave's not here right now. We're waiting for him to come in so we can screen our call. So I don't know. I will try. Let me try. If you can get me the area code, but right now what I'll do, because we have a bunch of calls on here, I'll just pick one randomly, really quick.
David Chen, help us now. You're our only hope. Yeah, hang on 1 second, and I will find.
Okay, just really quick. I'm going to just call an area code. Tell me your name. Tell me what you want to talk about here on Leaving the Ring, but we're waiting to find out the area code that Gabriel Rosario is calling us from. Area code 773.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, who am I speaking to?
Gabriel?
Hello? This is Dave. Is this Gabriel?
I will get Gabriel on the phone. Hang on 1 second.
Great. Thank you.
Fantastic.
All right. See, look, first pick I make.
You are good.
Gabriel, go ahead. You're on the phone with Dave.
How you doing, Gabriel? This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring. Welcome to the show, brother.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I said, welcome to the show, man. I'm happy to have you back on. We've had you on before. A big fight coming up for yourself. Now, is this for the title? Because we had a caller earlier, you know, mentioning the fact that you want to make sure that it's 160 pounds, no catch weight. So is this for sure now for the title, or what's the deal?
Yeah. You know, I never wanted a catch weight. Wait 1 second, please. All right, then. Yeah, I never wanted a catch weight. You know, the fight with that one. It's for the middleweight title, which is at 160, and I just wanted to honor the weight class. And you know, that's me and my trainer, we disagreed on that. We never wanted to catch weight.
For you, I mean, you make 54 probably very easily. But for you, what is being at 160 going to do for you physically?
You know, honestly, man, I'm probably the biggest junior middleweight in boxing right now. You know, I'm pretty much a middleweight to commit junior middleweight. Right now, physically, I think I'm faster than I've ever been. I'm strong, and I think the extra pounds is going to make me a bigger puncher as well. So everything's going great. Training camp is going well. The sparring is going perfect. And I feel really strong right now, man. So, you know, I'm right now about 169 solid. You know, so I just got a few pounds to lose, but you know, I'm feeling great.
A lot of people look at getting to Golovkin. There's a weird echo. Sorry about that. I don't know if somebody has the radio on or the computer on. Or if they do, they turn the volume down. That's probably what it is. They look at his style. They see kind of a basic style. He kind of moves slowly. You know, he looks simple. As a fighter, what do you see, though, when you look at him?
Hello?
Did you catch that? As a fighter, can you break down what you see in Gennady Golovkin? Do you consider him to be simple, or do you think he's more complex than meets the eye?
I mean, I think he's a basic guy, you know, and I think he's solid, you know, and I think, you know, his biggest asset is the fact that he has a, you know, he packs a good punch, you know, but I definitely see myself being a lot faster than he is. And I think the difference in the fight is going to be the ability to adjust. I think with Triple G, I think what you see is what you get. You know, he's a guy that's going to come forward and he's going to try to land that big shot. And I think, you know, I have the advantage in where I can box, I can bang, I can counter, I can pretty much do a couple of things. I can resort to different styles where he just relies on that one thing, which is applying pressure. You know, I don't think it's going to be an easy fight because I think he's a strong guy. And he's, you know, he's the middleweight champion. He's definitely going to come to win, but, you know, I feel extremely confident that at the end of the night I'll be victorious.
You know, his power is something that is always noted among fans and stuff. It's in your opinion, you know, like you said, you feel like, you know, you're by far one of the biggest 154s out there. Do you feel like you have to test to test yourself to see how strong he is, and then that's where you make your adjustments from. Like if he is really strong and you feel it right away, you get into a boxing mode. But if you feel like, hey, I could take this guy's punches, I'm going to sit there in the pocket with them and trade shots. Is that what you mean by adjustments?
You know, the thing, you know, as far as adjustments, you know, maybe the jab's not working. Maybe he can take the jab. Maybe he'll take the jab away. I can resort to something else. You know, if pressure's not working, I can resort to boxing. You know, what I mean about adjustments is just, you know, I don't have to just stick to one style. You know, I think with Triple G, he's just one-dimensional. You know, and it's a really good dimension, though. You know, he's a solid guy, and he applies pressure and he packs a punch. But, you know, I can do the same thing. You know, I've done that before. I've applied pressure to guys and broke them down and knocked them out. I've done it with Soto Carraz this year. I did it with Segun Powell, and I did it with Charles Whitaker. I could break guys down. So I could do more than one thing to get a win in a fight. So I think that's what I'm saying when it's going to be a difference in a fight, because I think he's going to have all the will to win, and so am I. You know, no one's going to back down. No one's afraid of each other in this fight. You know, I think it's just going to be a matter of who's the smarter man and who can make the adjustments. I think at the end of the day, that's going to be me.
You know, our fans are – there's a couple fans, and I've spoke to some fans, and they really just kind of undermined anything that you bring to the table. And I was kind of thrown back by that, because I was like, wow, you know, because some fans were like, well, I don't really know anything about Gabriel. And I'm like, at the same time, I'm like, well, Triple G's almost in that same category. I think I know more about you than I know really of Gennady. But
yeah.
I don't get how some fans are not really – making you a viable threat. I think you're a major threat to him, you know, in terms of bringing some boxing skills and height and size. You know, I've seen your past fights, and I think that you pose a lot towards him. Do you think that favors for yourself? Does it add a little bit more to the motivation department for you, knowing that there's fans out there that are just like, they really have fallen into to Gennady's hype and the power that he brings, you know, that's been really seldom in view in terms on television?
Yeah, well, you know, definitely motivates me, because, you know, I put myself in this fight because I want to do what people think I can't do. I want to prove people wrong, you know, so that definitely motivates me. It's a challenge. So I'm definitely confident that I'll beat this guy, you know, and I know a lot of people are caught up in the excitement of Triple G and whatnot. But as a fighter, you know, I understand what it is. You know, I see flaws. You know, I see things that I can capitalize on that, you know, fans just look at one thing. Fans look at power, and they get caught up in that. But, you know, I come from an old-school background where my trainer's old-school trainer, and we work on our craft. We work on rolling shots. We work on countering. We educate ourselves, you know. We don't just go to the gym and train. We study films. You know, we really educate ourselves in fighting in the inside, fighting in the outside, throwing the jab, and a bunch of other things. Is why I've turned my career around so dramatically, because, you know, I'm a student of the game, and I definitely respect the sport, and I work on my craft. So, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to display that on January 19th, and, you know, all the non-believers are definitely believing me from there on.
You know, speaking to that, you know, you haven't lost since 2010, July, against Derek Ennis in a close fight, a majority decision. What's been the difference?
Yeah, which a lot of people thought that I won, and I thought I won that fight as well, but, you know, it happens.
It happens. It's a subjective sport, you know, but it was a close fight, so you can kind of, I mean, winning's always better, but you can kind of look at it and say, well, it was close. But you've been on a seven-fight winning streak. I'm just curious, what do you attribute to your win streak? I mean, was it a mental shift? What was it?
You know, it was just a lot of things. You know, I wasn't the fighter that came up, you know, with a silver spoon. You know, I was a fighter that, you know, I started late in the sport. At the age of 18, I only had 11 amateur fights. And then I went pro at 19, you know, just, you know, I had turned 20 the next day. So, you know, I was pretty much learning on the job as a professional, and I was learning on the job against top-notch opponents. You know, I was fighting guys like Fernando Guerrero and Alfredo Angulo, and at the same time when I was fighting these guys, I had to hold down a job. You know, I had a family to take care of, so, you know, I was doing 10-hour shifts and getting out of work, and with a little bit of energy that I had, you know, go to the gym and try to train for a 10-12-round fight, which is crazy. You know,
there's only so much energy to go around.
Exactly, you know, and that's the type of role that I had in my career that a lot of people don't understand, you know. So, you know, at this point in my career, I've been able to be blessed with fights where, you know, I was paid good enough where I don't no longer have to work. I can just train 24/7 and really dedicate myself to the sport. And I take full advantage of that now. You know, when I fought Soto Carraz, that was the last fight where I no longer had to work. So training for Soto Carraz, I was actually working a graveyard shift at Home Depot when I fought Soto Carraz. And I actually, after 6 weeks of training camp for that fight, working at Home Depot doing a graveyard shift, and then I took off the last 2 weeks. The boss allowed me to take off 2 weeks for the fight.
And, I've worked graveyard shifts, man. That's brutal. That's commitment.
That's doing a graveyard shift, getting out of work at 6 in the morning to run 4 miles, to then sleep probably 4 or 5 hours, to then go to the gym and spar and, you know, get no rest and go straight to work after the gym. And, you know, that's the career I've had, you know, and to be fine at world-class level is very difficult. You know, boxing alone, just training alone is tough. So when you have to hold a job down and things like that, it's difficult. But, you know, it's the role that I've had, and I wouldn't change it for nothing because it's made me the type of fighter I am, and it's made me hungry, and it's made me appreciate the fact that I'm able to train 24/7 and I take full advantage of the opportunity.
And I don't know if people out there that have not worked a graveyard shift. I used to do 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. for like almost 2 years. When you sleep during the day, it's not the same kind of rest. I don't think people get that.
No,
you know,
not.
You're always in a fog.
It feels more
you know?
Like, it feels more like a nap.
Right. Totally. Yeah, you blink and you're back awake. You're like, oh, dude. Let me ask you this, too. 2012 was an interesting year for you in that you guys kind of maneuvered you in the rankings. You went after and won the vacant WBO Intercontinental Junior Middle Belt, and then you went after the IBF Light Middle Title Eliminator in your next fight against Whitaker, and you won both of those handily. Will going for the middleweight title affect those rankings? I don't think people will realize those are regional belts that kind of improve your rankings and move you towards a title shot.
Oh, yeah.
So does this mess with that?
Yeah, you know. Yeah, because the Charles Whitaker fight, that was my last fight, and it clinched the spot for the number one spot for the IBF, in which I was K-9's mandatory. And by me going up in weight to fight Triple G, I lost my ranking. And I knew that going into the fight, but, you know, I just felt that the reward would be greater fighting Genazi, Triple G. I just felt like it was a better fight, a better challenge. And I felt like, you know, it was just that type of fight where I definitely make a statement. So I definitely, you know, I did lose my ranking of my mandatory with K-9.
Man, you talk about sacrifice, you know? That's sacrifice there, and that's some commitment, man. Big time, you know, too. I guess, you know, when what you're saying and what I'm hearing, it's the bet is that this is going to take you into the next level and possibly to the bigger fights that you're hoping to receive, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think that, you know, I know that a big win against Triple G on HBO, you know, definitely puts a stamp on it, you know. No disrespect to K-9. I think K-9's a great champion, but, you know, a lot of people would say that he's too old or whatnot, and, you know, but I think with Triple G, you know, everybody's looking at this guy like he's legit, and they're naming him to be the next best thing, and I just like that.
Well, that and HBO seems to be behind him, you know, they're putting him at Madison Square Garden. I mean, that's no disrespect to any of the 54 champions, but there's really only one guy that if you beat him, all of a sudden your name would raise, and that's Saul Alvarez. And he's not looking to make that fight. He's doing other things. So, yeah, I think it's a solid move, man. And for me personally, I think the middleweights is always kind of like the heavyweight division of the smaller weight classes. So, I don't know, middleweight champion sounds better than junior. I just hope that... What's that?
You know what I was just going to mention? I just hope that if you do win, Gabriel, that they don't shorten you by not giving you other big fights. Because, you know, a lot of times we've seen this happen numerous times is, you know, a network will back up a fighter completely. And then when that fighter loses, the winner of that fight somehow doesn't get another TV date. You know, they kind of fall behind and then they still support the fighter that lost. I hope you get your justification. If you win this fight, that they back you up and they move you forward, because you beat a guy that's supposed to be an it factor. He's supposed to be a major factor at the middleweight division, and it's only fair and right. You've made the sacrifices, and they need to be prepared. Yeah. They need to be prepared for the sacrifices if their man doesn't win.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, you always you know, the good thing about becoming a champion is that, you know, you'll always have your mandatory, so at least you get to stay busy with the mandatories. But you know, I'm hoping that you know a victory definitely, you know, gets me the big fights and the big names that I want. Definitely.
That's the
reason why me and my trainer made the move.
Man, I applaud you for that, too, all the way, man. Well, Gabriel, hey, thanks again for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. Wish you all the luck, and can't wait to see you get in the ring there with Triple G and see what happens.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, good luck to you, man. Thank you so much for the interview. And hey, you know, rematch clause if you win. So it's just win-win all the way around.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, man. Exactly. Happy New Year to you.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
You too.
Gabriel Rosado has got his shot, his big shot on HBO against Gennady Golovkin. It's going to be a good fight. Like I say, he's a live underdog. I know a lot of fight fans don't know a whole lot about him, and they're just really kind of looking at him like, this guy's going to be ran over. I don't see that happening. You know, this is going to be a really solid fight. Let me patch in our translator, JC Rodriguez. What's up, brother? You're on live on Leaving the Ring. How you doing, man?
Hey, how are you guys? I'm doing great.
Good, bro. Good. Hey, thanks for being patient here. We're running a little late, as usual, on Leaving the Ring. I'm gonna call in our next guest. Here, let me see if I can get through. Hold on. Give me a second. We're gonna be calling in Orlando Salido, who's got his big fight with Mikey Garcia. And that's a big fight there. I get everybody's opinion.
Why do you keep hurting me?
I know. I'm sorry.
Stop.
My bad. I hung up on myself. Go figure.
I hate windows. Yeah. Nice. And we're back. That was a quick recovery.
I pressed send and I don't know.
It's okay.
It's all right. Yeah.
Technology. I think it's an interesting fight because, you know, Gabe is a little bit of an unknown quantity. I think on some level for himself, and this is the classic question I should have asked when he was here. You always remember that one as soon as they're gone. But I think there's still things he's finding out about himself. You know, now he's going to find out how he feels at 160. I think he's going to be a little refreshed. It was kind of his way of saying that by saying he's a big 54. You know, I think it's not having to make the weight. You know, they can do a lot with those extra pounds right there. But I think in terms of handling how he's going to handle the power of Golovkin, who doesn't look like he hits hard, but when he hits you, he certainly appears, you know, to the outside viewer like he hits hard.
Right.
You know, the Proxa seemed to be handling his power okay, and then all of a sudden he wasn't. That's going to be interesting to watch, because I think Rosado is a pretty rugged guy, despite what happened with Angulo. I think, you know, he was right on the money. There was a seriously experienced fighter, despite not having that many fights, Angulo. He's an Olympian, you know. And Rosado is a guy that's running on the job. It's just styles or whatever, but, you know, experience counts for a lot in this game. And Angulo's got a lot of it. He's got a lot of presence of mind due to his amateur experience. Do we have Salido?
No, we don't.
So I think it's going to be a fun fight. I think it's, you know, styles make fights. I mean, I think win or lose, it's going to be something really special. I think it's going to be something fun to watch. Golovkin is interesting. I mean, He doesn't go out there. He's not frenetic like Manny Pacquiao. He's not cold and calculating like a Floyd Mayweather or a true technician that you can just really watch the beauty of the work that he does. He's something in between, you know, this kind of pressure fighter with a lot of power that just kind of is a seek and destroy guy, but it's very patient about it and kind of intelligent about it and deceptive, I think, in some ways. People kind of sleep on him a little bit, and then all of a sudden you're staring at the lights. So I think it's going to be a fun fight. Rosado's going to bring it to him, and he going in, he understands he's got to have to be malleable. He's going to have to change a little bit. If something's not working, he's going to have to look for another tool to make work. So I think that gives him a leg up right off the bat, knowing that you have to kind of be a little bit different than what you normally
Mientras te responden la llamada, te informamos que este teléfono ha procesado más de 2,450,000 palabras. Ha sostenido 4,786 conversaciones.
Bueno, ¿puedo hablar con Orlando?
Sí, verás, permíteme.
Okay.
Is our translator?
All right, guys, we're in business.
Ooh, wow, that is a snap and a half. I got to lower that down. We're going to land.
I did it. Es que de la calle.
Oh, okay. No, está bien, está bien.
Ahí viene, ahí viene.
We're getting Orlando in, and I figured it out. I figured out the call. Bueno, Orlando.
Sí.
Orlando, ¿cómo estás? Mi nombre es David Duenes con mi compa Gabriel Montoya. Nosotros vamos a hablar en inglés y JC Rodríguez va a hablar en español, ¿ok?
Ok, está bien.
Y gracias tiempo para hablar con nosotros. JC, tell him thank you again for taking the time to speak to us. He's been on our show a couple of times, and it's just our pleasure to have him back on with us in the new year.
Orlando, te queremos dar las gracias por estar aquí en el show Delivering in the Ring en esta noche, y te queremos desear un feliz año nuevo. Primeramente, te queremos agradecer que estés en el show, y ya sé que has estado con nosotros un par de veces, pero esperamos tener una buena entrevista contigo este día.
Ok, ojalá, así será.
Alright, looking forward to it.
My first question is this fight with Mikey Garcia, which is a anticipated bout. A lot of us are. I know I'm looking forward to this fight a whole lot. In his opinion, is he looking at this as the way they build it? In the way to me, the way they've kind of built this up is to get the new to get the old out. Is that how he's looking at this? Is that they're looking to build a star? And they're looking at maybe his age may be catching up.
Orlando, la primera pregunta que tenemos es, primeramente es una gran pelea que se está esperando por muchos fanáticos del boxeo. Y de la manera que te quieren preguntar es, ¿estás mirando esta pelea como que quieren poner a la nueva estrella que es Mikey Garcia contra el veterano, que te consideran el veterano a ti, Orlando Salido? ¿Lo miras como una manera donde quieren empujar a la nueva estrella y a sacar al veterano de esta pelea del boxeo?
Bueno, pues sí lo veo así, que están empujando a Mikey García para que sea una estrella naciente, un peleador invicto, de buena técnica, buena pegada, y tiene varios años. Yo pienso que sí, están empujando eso.
What he's saying is that he definitely feels that Mikey is getting the push. They're looking at him as this young, undefeated, good technician with a good punch fighter. And you know, they're basically looking at him to be the next star. So he's definitely looking at it as a fight where he feels that the new guy's being pushed.
So does he feel like he still hasn't gained that respect that he so much has sought out for? Because I thought they would have finally given him that respect. Since he's, you know, he's fought some hard fights and he's proved that he's a champion. Does he feel that he still hasn't won that respect yet?
Orlando, ¿piensas tú que todavía no te dan el respeto que te mereces? Has estado en peleas grandísimas y las has ganado y has demostrado que tienes la capacidad de un gran boxeador veterano con bastantes agallas. ¿Qué piensas de eso?
Bueno, yo pienso que ya me he ganado mi lugar en el boxeo, ya se ha reconocido. Ahora sí la gente ya conoce a Orlando Salido, sabe de mi trayectoria, de mi carrera, y saben lo que estoy haciendo ahora.
What Orlando is saying is that, in his opinion, he definitely feels like he's getting the respect from the fans. He feels that everyone knows his trajectory now. He knows their career path, and they know that what he's gone through to become the champion that he is now.
When you look at Garcia, you know, he's a very patient fighter. He takes a long time to warm into the fight and to let his hands go. But when he does, he really is very, very accurate, and he tends to get his opponents out of there. Do you think the onus is on you to be very aggressive and never let him get into a rhythm or get comfortable in the fight right from the start?
Cuando miras a Mikey Garcia, es un boxeador que toma tiempo para calentar, para empezar a tirar los golpes. Es muy paciente, pero cuando es paciente ya empieza a conectar más. ¿Piensas tú que tienes la responsabilidad en esta pelea para comenzar a ser más agresivo, a pegar más fuerte desde un principio?
Bueno, yo soy el campeón, pero viendo ahí como quieren darle más oportunidad a Mikey García, hay que presionar desde que comience hasta que termine.
He says, you know what, I'm the champion, and I feel that, you know, since they're giving Mikey a good push, and they're pushing him as the next superstar, I feel that I have to pressure from the start to make sure that I get my due.
It seems like you've had a bit of a career resurgence. You know, you hit your 30s, and all of a sudden, I mean, it wasn't like all of a sudden you started winning, but it seems like you had a career upswing, particularly with the Juan Manuel Lopez fights. What do you attribute that to? Is it you've just kind of rededicated yourself, or do you think you were presented with the right styles and the right opportunities at the right time?
Nuestra pregunta, Orlando Salido, es que recientemente has tenido como una ha revivido tu carrera últimamente. No están diciendo que no has sido un campeón y que no has tenido tus gran victorias, pero lo que están diciendo es que últimamente con tus peleas con Juan Manuel López, con tus recientes victorias, has tenido una carrera que ha tenido una trayectoria bastante rápida al estrellato. ¿A qué piensas que se te atribuye eso? ¿Te has dedicado más a tu entrenamiento? ¿Qué has hecho diferente?
Pues sí, mi preparación han sido diferentes a las veces anteriores. Ahora más dedicación, más tiempo en el gimnasio, más tiempo en la corrida, subir de intensidad, más dedicado en lo que estoy haciendo. Por eso me han dado resultados muy buenos ahora contra grandes peleadores.
What he's saying is basically he has rededicated himself. He's definitely pushing himself more in training. He's doing more road work. He's doing additional training. He's definitely focused more. You know, he feels that, you know, at this point of his career, that's taking more of a focus in what he's doing in every fight, you know, since the last few fights.
Does he feel that with Mikey Garcia? Because, you know, when this fight was mentioned, I had brought up that I thought this might be a tad too early for Mikey to step in with Orlando, because he's such a seasoned pro, and I kind of look at him more as the professor in this fight. Does he feel the same way that, you know, even though this is a great matchup, a great step up for Mikey Garcia, but it may be a bit early for him?
Yeah, lo que están diciendo es cuando recién firmaron la pelea, pensaban los comentaristas del show que era un poco muy temprano para Mikey Garcia, porque era un poco joven, sin mucha experiencia, y te veían a ti, Orlando, como un boxeador con bastante experiencia, y piensan ellos que tal vez sea un poquito muy pronto para Mikey Garcia. ¿Qué es tu opinión acerca de esta pelea? ¿Cómo la miras?
Bueno, pues yo miro una pelea pareja. Es un buen peleador, tiene un buen contragolpe, pelea bien, no ha perdido. Se ha enfrentado pues a buenos peleadores, a los campeones mundiales, y los ha vencido. Pero yo pienso que con Orlando Salido será muy diferente, pues va a ser otro tipo de pelea. Uno le va a exigir más, va a ser una pelea total diferente como a todos los peleadores que ha enfrentado.
What he's saying is, you know, Mikey Garcia, he sees this as a pretty even fight. I mean, he looks at Mikey Garcia as an undefeated, great counter-puncher type of fighter, and you know, that has fought decent level of opposition, including some ex-champions. But what he's saying is that the type of level that he's fought, the type of fighter that he's fought, Mikey, is completely different from him, or, you know, from Orlando Salido, and he feels that the type of pressure that Orlando Salido, that he's going to be putting on Mikey Garcia from round one, is going to be something that Mikey is not prepared for.
Yeah, I expect it to be a real awakening for him, because he hasn't faced someone like you. I'm curious, and don't take this question the wrong way, but Juan Ramon Marquez's strength coach is Angel Heredia, and he's, I guess, was introduced to Juan by the head of Zanfer, Fernando Beltran. Heredia has said he's working with 9 current world champions, and I'm just curious, because he won't say who they are. Are you one of those champions?
Orlando, primeramente no tomes esta pregunta de mala manera. Lo que te quieren preguntar es, el entrenador de strength and conditioning de Juan Manuel Márquez, Ángel Heredia, ha indicado y ha dicho en varias entrevistas que tiene 9 campeones bajo sus entrenamientos. Lo que te quieren preguntar es que si tú eres uno de ellos.
No. No, yo no estoy bajo su plan de entrenamiento de Heredia. Yo tengo mi preparador físico aparte y mi entrenador también.
Okay. Basically, what Orlando said is that no, he's not under Angel Heredia, and he has his own strength and conditioning coach, and he's doing everything separate.
I just appreciate his candor. He's always been so, or his honesty. He's always
humble,
been so so open with us about,
right.
And he went in depth about his previous incident and everything. And just tell him that I really appreciate it. I don't mean to insinuate anything. I'm only asking because Heredia refuses to mention it.
Okay, muchas gracias por tu honestidad, Orlando. Lo que están diciendo es que no lo tomes a mal. Simplemente siempre tú has sido muy honesto en el show con los comentaristas, y ellos nomás quieren preguntar porque Ángel Heredia nunca ha dicho cuáles son los campeones que están bajo su plan de condición.
Okay, no problem.
No problem.
I would like to ask his educated opinion, though, because he's had to go through he had a positive test, and he's had to kind of live it down, and I think he very much has at this point. Does he think that there should be better testing in boxing in order to avoid suspicions that end up happening to boxers? That way there's no suspicion for anybody because everybody's testing the same way. Does he think that's an important issue?
Okay, Orlando, te quieren preguntar, primeramente que you know, basado en el hecho que tú has estado positivo en una prueba y has hecho un buen trabajo en tu carrera tratando de limpiar ese resultado con gran trabajo y en tu entrenamiento. ¿Piensas tú, en tu opinión, que se debe de haber mejor pruebas antidopaje en el deporte del boxeo?
Yo pienso que sí debe haber pruebas mejores, porque a mí me hicieron una prueba, que una salió positivo antes de subirme al ring, y una después de bajar el ring salió negativo, y ahí hubo una controversia y todo eso, y hasta que me declararon culpable por algo, pero debe ser más estricta las normas antidopaje en el boxeo.
Okay, you know what he's saying is, I'm all for better testing, you know, especially since I tested positive. There was a big controversy on the testing that I had. Before I entered the ring, the testing came back positive. After I left the ring, they gave me another test, and it came back negative. So, you know, I'm all for better testing.
Awesome.
His, you know, Mikey Garcia is one of those patient guys. You know, he takes his time. Is that going to benefit Orlando a lot more because that Mikey can become very patient?
Okay, Orlando, nuevamente te decimos, Mikey García es muy paciente en el ring, empieza despacio y luego empieza su actividad a subir en los rounds medianos. ¿Piensas tú que eso va a ser para tu ventaja porque tú eres un peleador que da presión?
Pues yo pienso que va a ser una pelea totalmente diferente. Yo creo que él va a tener, si él quiere ser campeón, tiene que lanzar golpes. Y si quiere ganar, es lo que va a tener que hacer. Pero yo también voy a hacer mi trabajo, una pelea inteligente, buscarlo, presionarlo, hacerlo y golpearlo.
Okay. What he's saying is basically that if Mikey Garcia wants to be a champion, he's going to have to change that game plan. He's definitely have to start punching more. He's going to have to be more aggressive from the start. The patience is not really going to work with Orlando, because what Orlando is going to be doing from the start is going to give him smart pressure and definitely not let him go. It's going to be pressuring from the start, but in a very smart way. And Marky has to be ready for that.
I really like this fight. I can't wait for them to both get in there. This is a well-matched-up fight. I wish him all the luck. I can't wait to get him back on, and I really appreciate him coming on. And like always, he takes the tough questions that we throw at him, and he's always been very, very open and honest with us. And he just seems like a very humble champion, and that's one of the reasons why I'm a big fan of his.
Orlando, nuevamente, muchas gracias por darnos esta oportunidad de entrevistarte. Siempre has sido muy honesto. Y has trabajado tu carrera con orgullo y con bastante edad. Y por eso mismo te dan muchas gracias por todo eso. Y te quieren desear mucha suerte en tu pelea el 19 de enero.
Muchas gracias por la invitación. Y fue un honor estar aquí en el foro con usted.
Okay. He wants to thank you all for giving him the opportunity for the interview and for having him giving the opportunity to speak in this forum.
Okay, our pleasure. Just tell him, he really he exemplifies what it is to be a champion, the way he deals with the interviews, the way he acts out of the ring, and most importantly, the way he acts in the ring. And just congratulate him on a great 2012 and wish him a happy new year.
Felicidades por el año 2012 y muchas gracias por la manera en que te has dedicado a ser campeón, por la dedicación que le tienes al deporte y por ser una gran persona y boxeador.
Gracias. Muchas gracias. Gracias a todos.
Okay, gracias.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Yep.
Orlando Salido here with us on Leave the Ring. JC Rodriguez, who's our translator, does a fantastic job and takes the time out, man, to speak to us here and help us out on the radio show. Hey, thanks, brother, again, man, for coming on and translating for us.
My pleasure. Anytime, guys. Take care.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, man.
So we have Gabriel Rosado and Orlando Salido in about 3 more minutes. We're going to be calling in Fernando Guerrero, who's going to be fighting Peter Quillen. And let me text him and let him know that we're going to be calling them in right now, so we're not waiting too long. Or you know what? I might just have to just call him in. Anyway, I like the answers that Orlando says. And
yeah, I mean, if people want to know what he was talking about with his positive test and all that, and in the previous interview that he did with us, I think it was the previous one, maybe it was the one before.
It was actually the very first one that he ever did with us, and that was in – and I got it all written down because I've been
poking – You're doing the best of.
Yeah. Of 2012, and that was in February 2nd when he came on and he was talking to us about the rematch with Juanma Lopez, and we asked him about the positive testing – that he did receive, in his fight. And I believe it was for the Guerrero fight.
Right. And then he kind of went back into it and said, there was a second test and it didn't come up. It's a really long explanation. I probably should end up transcribing it and printing it, but kind of just saved it away in my own notes for another article somewhere. But, yeah, it's definitely findable. And just listen to it. It's an interesting story of how he goes about, how the whole positive test rolled out. So,
because, I've gotten some fans are like, oh, he's a cheater. I don't care about him. And I'm like, you know what? You really need to go back and listen to the ordeal that he had to go through, because it was turned out that it was negative. And he explained the whole thing. And he did explain how much, the turmoil that he had to go through in order to kind of clear up his name to get a fight. This guy was trying to support his family. So you can find it. It's on the Leaving the Ring website, leavingtheringradio.com. And it's, like I said, it's under our Leaving the Ring TV. And you can hear the whole interview. It's with Casitas and stuff. So you should be able to find it. It is on there. And I'll tweet it out there again. I've been tweeting it out for the past 2 days and stuff. Folks, really quick, too, asking us if we're going to do the Ustream again, because we didn't mention it before the year ended. Yeah, we are. We have the gym that we're going to do it, but we're making sure everything is solid, and we're making sure that this time the camera and the work is going to be correct and ready to go, the internet, before we go out there and do a because we end up doing like a test run like an hour before the show starts, and it just falls apart. So we're going to try to make sure for this year, 2013, we're doing it right and solid. And I think you guys are going to like the guests that we have lined up for the live Ustream that we are going to be doing in Southern California. But let's call in our next guest.
Yeah. It's going to be a very special day. I'm very excited about our next Ustream.
I can't wait for that next Ustream.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And should we get Fernando Guerrero?
I just like the fact that Salido, he does answer the question. And most people would be like, look, that's the past. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
He goes right into the lion's den, man, and is just all good with it. And he keeps coming back on the show, which is great.
That's a big plus.
I'm not sure if I would come back, you know. This guy asking me this again.
Like, God damn it.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Okay, you know what? I promised them that I was going to call him and let him know that I was going to text him first. Because it does come up a private number.
I can throw him a text if you want to talk or something and cover the air. I think I've got his number straight up.
Okay. Well, let me know if you do or not so that I can continue. I'm going to patch in some five bands that have been waiting on hold here. We're waiting for David Chan to log on so that he can take care of the switchboard. So you got to bear with me. And I'm just going to call out your area code. Tell me your name and what you want to discuss here on Leaving the Ring. Area code 602. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hi, David. It's Emily.
Hey, Emily. How are you doing? Thank you for setting up the whole Orlando Salido
interview
for us. Emily's a publicist who helps us out and is also a writer for Leaving the Ring on the occasions when she has the time, because she's a very busy, busy, busy woman in the boxing world business.
Thanks. Thank you for having him on. I'm excited for this fight, man. I can't wait.
I can't wait either. It's a very well-matched fight. Both guys, you know, and I get people that go like, you know, I don't know why you don't think Mikey Garcia is ready. I think Orlando kind of summed it up pretty well by saying that he hasn't really fought anybody in the style of what Orlando Salido brings, which is going to be pressure, intelligence, and combinations. You know, Mikey's been able to get away with some youth, but reckless youth, and he's been able to capitalize and stuff like that. He's been able to reserve himself and be patient and you know, execute as a silent assassin, but at the same time, nobody's really made him think. Nobody's ever really made him kind of back up and go, whoa, I got to do something different. We saw that with Garcia in his last fight, where his older brother, who is his trainer and his father too as well, they were asking for more out of him, you know. And this is something that if he doesn't produce, Orlando will overwhelm him and we could possibly see a stoppage for the young Mikey Garcia. So it's an interesting fight, very interesting fight.
It really is. Yeah.
Mikey waits. You know, a lot of people kind of look at him and say, you know, he waits too long. And I don't think he's going to have that kind of time as he's had with previous opponents. But I'm sure his trainers know that. And, you know, I honestly think it's going to be great. But I like Mikey. I work with Pelos Garcia, his nephew, and good guy. But I, you know, also happen to work with Orlando. And I believe in Orlando. And I think he's going to do great on the 19th.
I think so, too. Emily, I'm going to put you back on the game.
I'm picking Salido in this one. I just think it's going to be one of those fights that's going to make Mikey better down the road, but he ain't winning this fight. I just think the older guy, more experienced. He's not an old man. He's only 32, and he's just coming into his own right now. I like him. Late stoppage.
You know what? I'm a fan of Mikey Garcia, and I want to see him progress. I want him to get there, you know. But I still feel that maybe two or three more fights, I think they could have held off. You know, is it a fight that's needed? We want to see. Absolutely. These matches are always needed to be made in boxing. But sometimes, does it benefit the fighter? And in this particular fight, I don't think it's going to really benefit Mikey Garcia, because he might be a tad too late in reaction-wise to a season and a guy that does apply a lot of pressure. And this is a night that we've said this numerous times on Leaving the Ring, is you're going to have to grow up quick. And this is going to be Mikey Garcia's night with Orlando Salido. He's going to have to grow up really fast with Orlando Salido, because he's not going to allow him to grow in the minutes of the round. So this is a tough and interesting fight. I'm going to patch in another fight fan until we wait to find out if Fernando is ready to get
Fernando
on.
Fernando Guerrero. Yeah, we need to. I texted him. I'm just kind of waiting back for an answer at this point.
Okay, let's patch in an area code again. We don't have David Chan with us. So area code 212, you're all live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother? Area code 212. I can hear the TV in the background.
I think he's listening to another show, it sounds like. Somebody going, like, really angry. Yeah, that's not going to work for us.
Let's try area code 267. You're on live right now and leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Listening to, like, the Transformers or something.
Area code 267. You're on live right now and leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing good, brother. Who am I speaking to?
This is Mark from Philadelphia. Actually, I've been listening since Gabe Rosado was on the air, and I wanted to wish him well in his fight because he's from Philly, and I know his trainer, Billy, quite well. And, you know, I'm pushing for Gabe to win this fight. This is a big fight for him. I watched Gabe's career go pretty much almost full circle. If he can win this world title, it will be. But Gabe has gotten a lot better since he's, you know, turned pro.
You know, I like his story a whole lot, and it's a very common story, but it's the story that I think that's really attracted people to the sport, and that's the guy that learns on the job. And you're absolutely right. You know, that's why it just kind of threw me back when I did receive in our, you know, emails, you know, people that just, they were like, this should be an easy night for Gennady. And I was like, really? Like, I don't see that. You know, I really see him as a major threat and a strong possibility where he can upset Gigi in terms of boxing skills, because there are times where he can become very one-dimensional. And I thought last fight helped him out with that power that he does bring to the table. But, you know, you can – there's that old saying, you know, a guy can be an animal, but all animals can be tamed. And I think Gabriel go ahead.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is, you know, I heard the question that you wanted to ask him about him being able to carry the full 160, moving all the way up to middleweight, and it's easier said than done. He says that he's carrying the weight fine right now, but this guy will come with a lot of pressure. But Gabe is a great boxer. I think Billy, his trainer, has taught him. Billy is a very slick trainer, and he's taught Gabe to be really slick defensively. So the key to me, it won't be the first six rounds of the fight. It'll probably be the second half of the fight. And if Gabe can still be strong from round 7 through 12 and he can take the shot, if he can prove he can take the shot, then I give him a good chance of maybe winning on points, maybe not by stoppage. I expect the other guy to more so stop Gabe. But Gabe maybe can win the fight by outboxing this guy if he can, depending on the size of the ring and if he can carry the weight, so the full 160.
Because the way you look, Gennady, they're looking at 154, they're looking at 168. He's got a lot of room to move. That's a huge question. How does he handle the weight? Is Gennady really a middleweight? You know, that's going to be. Look at, because he's kind of more of a welterweight that could probably make 54 not be that effective. But when you put him in with Canelo, that's a middleweight waiting to happen. And so he's got that side advantage key here. But I don't think Gennady is going to win. And I don't consider Rosado that at all. I think it's a real fight. And it's going to be a real fun fight.
It's going to be a real fun fight.
Class.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
So this would be a big year for Philly.
Let me ask you guys a question. I have. Yes, I'm actually a boxing trainer out of Philly. I also train professional fighters and amateur fighters, and I have a 7-year-old son that's an absolute monster that's coming up, and it's like great, you know, training my baby. He's doing great. He has a couple YouTube videos, and a lot of people in the gyms are like amazed at his boxing skills. But I wanted to ask you guys a question real quick. The fight that I really want to see happen in the early part of 2013, I want to see what you guys think, is Nonito Donaire versus Guillermo Rigondeaux.
Hmm. Love it.
I know they're not Chris John opponent for Donaire, but Top Rank, I think, is interested in making the fight. And they were really trying to do that kind of lead in, you know, the co-feature in this last, you know, Donaire Arce and Regan Dow was supposed to be on the card, and Crandon Dang Jang couldn't make it, so he had to drop out, and instead we just had one fight. But I think the Top Rank's very interested in making that fight, and man, that's a real fight. I think Guillermo is a real problem for Donaire. I think just his technical skills, his experience as an amateur, everything that he brings to bear, the power in both of his hands, he's going to be a serious problem. I don't know, but I haven't been able to judge this yet.
I actually would lean a little bit more with Nonito just because of the experience factor. But no didn't find out about the lot of problems. Do I want to absolutely debate until Chris Bill was not going to be up to go up? We've done have over as a little what is that? We saw well, that same that before and you know, first thing that go in your boxing in the boxing department is your legs, and we can see that with Chris John. So Regan Dow is a perfect matchup, and it's definitely a great way of starting the new year for the Nonito Dornier naysayers. You know, I know definitely I've been labeled as a naysayer for Nonito just because of the fact I want to see him with bigger and better fights out there. So to start it off with Regan Dow, that'd be a big start for me to go, okay, now we see you're serious in 2013. Hey, Mark.
How are you doing?
Great.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for calling in. Put you back on hold, okay?
I really appreciate it. Thank you, man.
Okay, thanks a lot, man.
Hey, and good luck with your son, man. Keep us posted with your boy.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
All right, you take care. Mark from Philly, who's a trainer, and his son, he's got a little one out there training, and you know, I always love to hear that. You know, I always love to hear a father or even a mother. I spoke to some mothers in gym and stuff, and they bring their little ones, and because you know that's the future right there to our sport. They're the ones that keep it in the mix. I believe we got David Chan. He's grabbing people on there, and now he's letting us know that people are listening in. They're not gonna, they don't want to ask questions. They just want to listen into the show and stuff. So I'm going to try one more time for Nando and see if we can get him on. Fernando Guerrero, who's going to be facing Peter Kid Chocolate Quillen. And
that'll be at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York on February 9th. It's going to be an interesting fight. I think it's a real fight.
I think so, too. I actually like this fight a lot.
It marks the first time, I believe, that two Al Haymon fighters that are kind of closer to his marquee-type fighters have fought each other. Most people said that wouldn't be done. I know Richard Schaefer said that.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic.
Said it was a very, very silly notion. That's my Richard Schaefer. You know, I don't know who came up with that. I'm like, I don't know. History? It's never happened before, Richard? Stop with the trying to be a tough guy, dude. Shave, get rid of the double-breasted suit, and come into 2013 and stop trying to be a tough guy. Just be a promoter that actually stands on the platform that you set out there, which is, everyone, to clean up the sport and to treat the fighters well. Give the fights to the fans that they want. Those are the three things you promised. Just keep doing those and save the tough guy antics for actual tough guys.
Your call has been forwarded.
I wonder if I told them 6:30, man. I didn't even write it down. I hope I told them the right time.
Take a few callers, and I want to send some angry texts to David Chen.
David,
I just got an interesting text. I followed him on Twitter. I know that Ryan Mack is working on this. He talked with Gary Hyde, and so I'm tweet this out, the manager of Guillermo Rigondeaux, and this should probably be posted. I think it'll probably be on Boxing Scene, which is where Ryan works. I don't usually plug
that.
But this is I don't usually plug that site, but you know, I plug Ryan. But apparently it's going to say that Regan Diao's manager is willing to do VADA testing, and that memo Heredia does not work with Regan Diao at all.
I saw that. That Ryan posted up on Twitter, and it's going to be up shortly on Boxing Scene, and that was good. They got that cleared up. I was actually trying to get a hold of Regan Diao's manager today, and didn't hear anything back from him, you know, with that I've checked and
well,
stuff.
It is kind of, well, it's interesting, you know, but let me throw something. There's another, you know, speaking of drug testing, a drug that I think has become very hot in the last quarter of 2012, I think could be something that's really on the table across the border, should be, is marijuana. And, you know, we had Julio Cesar Chavez test positive for it. I don't think he's been suspended just yet. And one of the things I was reading is that when they do suspend him, they're kind of going to give him time served. You know, the time that he's been off since the last fight, I think it'll be retroactive. That's one of the rumors I heard. But I think, and I don't know how you feel about this, but it's not something that should be tested for. It's not a performance enhancing drug unless you're making love or art or watching, you know, art of some kind, a film, or, you know, maybe you're on a roller coaster. That could be fun, being high on a roller coaster. But in the middle of a fight, I can't think of anybody that would be enhanced by being stoned during a boxing match or an MMA fight. I know some guys that train in the gym when they do jiu-jitsu, when they're rolling around, it kind of relaxes them, focuses them in. But again, it's not a performance-enhancing drug. It doesn't make you go faster. It doesn't make you go longer unless you're making art or love. It doesn't you know, make you any better than you were before as a fighter. I really need to stop testing it. And why I bring it up is because in the last 8 days, the Voluntary Anti-Doping Agency has come out and said they don't test for marijuana because they agree with everything I just said. So I know not Joe Rogan, Dana White from the UFC was going crazy, and that's the real problem, and screw, you know, Victor Conte and this and that and the other thing, and we can't do drug testing because all these guys are going to test positive for marijuana, and that's a big problem. Well, Dana, here you go. They don't test for drugs. They test for all the drugs except for marijuana. So you guys will be safe unless they're doing, you know, illegal shit. So I think that all the boxing promoters, all the fighters, they all should be aware of that. Because, you know, it's legal for recreational use in 2 states in the United States already. The rest of the world seems to be kind of ahead of us on this one. It's time for us to move into 2013. Uniform the testing, stop testing for weed, and let's all just wake up. So there you go. I've just killed a little bit of time while we're waiting for Fernando Guerrero.
Yeah, and I'm gonna try him one more time here on Leaving the Ring. You did text him and let him know, so he should be getting back. I talked to him earlier, so I did let him know the time. I'm pretty sure I told him 6. I could have said 6:30. You know, I didn't write it down. I should have. My bad. But when you're on the go and you're on the fly like I am all the time,
I just don't agree with this notion by Linus. I usually that as soon as the flash hits him, he's going to run all night. And it's going to be just don't see that. I think it's a good win for Donaire.
I think it's a tough win for Donaire. I don't see that either. I don't see as soon as he hits him, he's going to run all night. I think it's going to be a real, you know what? Let me point this out. I think it's not going to be a very exciting fight. I think both guys are going to be very aware that they both bring speed and power. It could mirror a lot of the Rico Ramos fight. You know, guys taking their time, looking to place their shots, not just to throw their shots. And to me, it would be in Nonito's best interest not to get too wild and crazy, because Ringendahl can pick them, and he'd pick those shots. And we've seen him do that. But like I said, I would lean towards Nonito winning the fight. I like the fight, but I think it could turn around really quickly with the power of Ringendahl, and that's something that shouldn't be underestimated. Even if he decided to get on his bicycle, I still say he's able to turn the fight around with one punch.
I think in terms of technical skill, I think Donaire is very skilled, but he's not the kind of guy that just goes into a traditional boxing stance if he wants to. He fights very original. He fights in his own style. Ringendahl is the ultimate technician, in my opinion. That's going to be a problem. And then the southpaw style, that's going to be a problem. I don't see him, Ringendahl, being like Narvaez. I think there's a little bit of bad blood between these two guys as well in trying to make this fight. Rigo is not like, from guys that know him that I've talked to, particularly the guy that did the documentary on him, he's not like a nice guy, you know. He's a fighter, and he's got an incredible ego. He wants to win. He He wants to dominate and prove. He kind of wants to make up for all the lost ground. I mean, he should be a multi-division champion at this point in his mind. But instead, you know, he couldn't leave his country. And now he's left his country, left his wife and his kid behind, probably never get to see them again unless he can afford some way to smuggle them over. And he's here alone on a mission to be a world champion boxer and get to that top level. Donaire is the obstacle in his way towards getting to that goal. I think it's a great fight. I really do.
I do too. You know, and to me, like I said, that is the way to start off the new year, is by taking a major threat challenge, in terms of, like I said, shutting a guy like myself who has been just, you know, banging at that table for him to step up. And I understand the whole management, the whole promoting thing. Okay, and like I said, okay, we've got all the rest of this stuff. We got 2012 out of the way. Now this is a new year. Now we need to see some major challenges. Now we need to see some major step up. And that's a great way to really just go, okay, I'm open to it. Let's do it. And I wouldn't be mad if he said, I'm going to wait, not fight Abner Morris. I'll go after, you know, Rigondeaux. Even, like I said, Chris John. But Chris John has lost those legs. He's not the same guy. And
that could be fun, though.
It would be a fun fight. It would
and he's a little bit bigger.
Yep.
But, you know, the Morris fight, there's only one way that fight happens with Donaire. And that is when Morris's contract, and I'm just making a prediction, I'm not really basing this on inside info or anything, just observations of watching Morris's career with Golden Boy. I think when that contract's up, Morris becomes a top-ranked fighter, and then we see it. That's the only time we see it. And maybe we see Morris versus Donaire at 126, maybe not even at 122. I think people need to get more patient and realize that top-ranked Golden Boy, that Cold War is a hot war, and it ain't ending anytime soon. It just isn't. They don't need each other. Top Rank is completely independent. They can do independent pay-per-views. They can get their own network dates. Showtime has their – I mean, I'm sorry, Golden Boy, same difference, has their own network at this point. They have Al Haymon's backing and his money and his influence, and they're going to use it. They have Floyd Mayweather, which is their trump card. These two companies do not need each other, and they don't care about the fans not getting the fights that they don't want. We saw that with Manny and Floyd. If they wanted to make it, they would have found some way to force these guys to do it, but they just couldn't do it, so it didn't happen. Morris Donaire is not going to happen this year. I would be very shocked to see it happen this year. Donaire Rigondeaux, I think, is a very good fight. That's probably the fight. I did see the Matakin fight. That was several fights ago. It was his first world title shot. You can't hold one boring fight against a guy for his entire career when all the other fights have actually been very, very good to watch. That's bottom line.
Is that bottom line?
Well, that's one of them.
Right.
I guess you can, but, I mean, that's like still holding against Andre Ward that he got knocked down. Oh, he's chinny. He was knocked down, like, early on in his career. He hasn't been – I haven't seen him wobbled. I haven't seen him dropped ever since. And I've seen him hit pretty hard by guys that can punch ever since. And sorry, but yeah, I just don't think he's chinny. Same thing with – you know, I think Rigondeaux might be a little chinny, but you also have to look at – the amount of experience that he has as a pro. And how many times have you seen a guy in the first 20 fights, even if he's a top-level guy, De La Hoya got dropped. Trinidad got dropped like 9 times before he got dropped for the final time against Bernard Hopkins. And was, you know, he still got up, but he got stopped right there. It took a long time. Oscar had been down. He'd been wobbled before. It happens. I don't believe in the perfect fighter that never gets never gets dropped, never gets beat,
right,
never gets hurt. That's just not the era I grew up in. That's just me. I like a guy that's a little chinny with a lot of power. That makes him unpredictable and really exciting because he can either be taken or he can take you. You know, that's fun. I don't know. That's just me.
I agree. You know, and I think that why wouldn't you want to see something like that with a guy a little chinny, a guy that will have to go for broke when he gets dropped, you know? And we've kind of seen that with Rigondeaux, where he gets clipped and he wants to return it, you know? But he's just one of those guys that are very conservative with his punches. He looks for it. And sometimes he looks for it for so long we start yawning. But at the same time, when he gets the job done, he wakes us up. He makes a stand up. And being there at the ring apron for his fight with Rico Ramos – you know, just the experience of hearing his punches how loud they are and how much of a thump there is behind those punches, it makes you kind of stay there a little bit more anticipated if you're there live. And that's the one thing that kind of sold me about them. Yeah, watching them on TV, is it one of those where you rub your eyes and you kind of just look away and can get up and go to the restroom and not really worry about anything at that moment until you hear the crowd go, oh, he's one of those guys, you know, where...
Were you bored by the Mighty Keane fight? That was the last fight. I'm thinking of the Cordoba fight that everybody holds against him. I wasn't that bored by the Mighty Keane fight. I thought that it was kind of exciting because Rigo got hit and he got hurt. And it happened a few times in the fight. I don't know. Were you... I wasn't bored by it.
I was a bit bored. I got to be honest. I was bored. And that's what I meant, you know, is that... let's be honest, he is boring, you know. He's not the most exciting guy in the world, but his punches make up for it, you know. He's got speed. He's got some power, and that power, it's not a full 3 minute round power,
no.
But it's one of those types of power that if you don't look for it, it will happen. Mm-hmm. And that's the exciting. He's not a Gennady. Gennady, you know, he's going to go out there and he's going to look for the big punch. Even like a Danny Garcia, the kid goes out there and he's looking to knock your head off. You know,
yeah,
but
the Rico Ramos fight, I mean, that was not exciting. But I didn't really blame that on Guillermo because he was kind of pressuring all night. It was Rico that was kind of running. I think it's just kind of interesting in boxing how some guys like a Pacquiao, you really need styles to bring to him and it'll make him exciting. You know, Claudio, when he clammed up or shelled up, it was not an exciting fight. But Rigondeaux is not really afforded that. I mean, he gets him with a counterpunch. Well, it's his fault. It's never the other guy's fault. I mean, Mighty Keane hurt him. Rigondeaux moved. That's what he does. He's going to counter. He's going to keep moving. He's going to walk you into shots. I just don't hold that against him. I don't know. I'm also one of those guys that enjoys watching Andre Ward fight. You know, this is such a subjective sport. Some things are boring to some people. Some things are super – I know guys that are super excited to watch Floyd Mayweather fight. For me, it depends on the style that he's facing. I loved the Cotto fight. I really enjoyed parts of the Shane Mosley fight. But, you know, I'm not one of those guys that's going to bust out his career DVD set to watch every fight because I enjoy watching them. I'm probably going to watch him to pick up on the different tools that he uses in a fight and maybe break down some tape that way. But – you know, different strokes for different folks.
Right, and that's the thing. Styles make fights. Would the fight with Nonito Donaire be boring? I don't think it would. I think, it's going to be boring in segments, but I think we're going to have some explosion, you know? Let's be honest, like with Austin Trout. Watching his other fights, were they very exciting? They weren't very exciting. They were solid. You were able to see the guy had skills. He was able – he really brought – the attention of being called a contender rolling into being a champion. Miguel Cotto, in my opinion, brought the excitement in their fight because he went after him. He was trying to get something because he was losing. So some fighters need that added person on the other side of the ring for them to bring out the best of them. And I think with Rigondeaux, he's that kind of fighter that if you allow him to sit back and you allow him to pace himself, he can be boring. Same thing with Mikey Garcia, you know, a very patient guy. Do I find him overly exciting? No, I don't. Do I find him as a great technician? Absolutely. And I like watching stuff like that. But at the same time, I like to watch explosions, you know, and Nonito does bring that. He's a guy that does have technically good. He's got great speed. He's got good power. And he doesn't really sit and wait to the point where I criticize that sometimes I think he needs to sit and wait. He needs to trap the guy. He needs to set up punches because sometimes he just thinks with his fists rather than with his brain. And with Rigondeaux, it's the opposite. He thinks too much with his brain and not enough with his fists.
I agree, but he's also – here's a guy that's naturally 118. And I know, you know, Linus is saying excuses, but he's 118. He's not a big man. He's actually a very small man, particularly compared to, like, Donaire. He's going to be the smaller guy in there. Generally – when he's in there against the smaller guys. So, yeah, he's going to move. Yeah, he's going to avoid things. But, again,
hey, but wouldn't it be great, though, like Linus and a couple other people hitting us up on Twitter, you know, putting the Z's. Wouldn't it be great just to see it so that we don't have to talk about it anymore, about the if and ands? That's why we want to see matches.
Honestly, I've never fought fights on paper. I just, you know, we make our predictions or whatever, but it's like guys that go, oh, well, see, Marquez knocked out Pacquiao, so Mayweather would have beaten him because he dominated Marquez. It doesn't work like that. Just because A beat B doesn't mean he beat C. It's called styles make fights. It's like it's one of the axioms of our sport.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, and 9 times out of 10, you know, you're saying Matakin's not that good. I agree. I've never been high on Matakin. But it's a lot of times it's that guy that you don't think much of that ends up kind of rocking your world, ends up catching you. Can you name anybody, just without Googling it or looking at BoxRec, name me the guy that dropped Andre Ward.
Oh, that was Boone.
Okay, there you go. Well, you're an exceptional human being, but you know, most people wouldn't be able to. You know, the guys early on that dropped Felix Trinidad, not really on his level.
Right.
You know, he ultimately became a Hall of Fame fighter. It happens.
Oh, I mean, look at you know Oscar De La Hoya. You know, he was dropped early in his career. You know, and look how far he got. I mean, a lot of fighters, you know, they get dropped. It doesn't mean a whole lot. A lot of great fighters have had dull nights, you know, and be able to look, and they're able to look great the next time around. But it all goes back and boils down to styles make fights, you know, and sometimes a boring fighter or a technician, I like that better, a technician needs the guy that's going to come at him, rush him, and fight him. Perfect example is Marquez and Pacquiao. In four fights, can you tell me one of them was not good to sit and watch on a replay? All four of them were great. They were made for each other.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't disagree. I want to see Modest Donaire. It's just not going to happen. I just would be really surprised to see it happen.
I you know what? I'm on that fence where I believe it's going to happen. It needs to happen. I agree with Linus on Twitter saying that, you know, Floyd and Pac, their camp didn't want that fight. Where Morris and Dornier, they want that fight. And I think that's the start. You know, that's the start for both fighters that could see that they see they have a major draw. There's a lot of money, in my opinion, with those two guys. Now, it's starting to build up, and it's starting to have that build up where the wall's getting, you know, taller and thicker, and to a point where somebody's got to cave in. And I agree with you. One of these guys are going to have to step up and leave their promoter as soon as the contract's up, or break that contract in order to secure their legacy and to make them get that money that they're seeking and an exception. Get that exception that they're fighting for and part of history of. So I'm hoping that they're going to step up. I'm hoping one of them is going to say, I'm going to be the lead guy on this one, and I'm going to put it on the line. Like a Gabriel Rosado, who's – it's a little bit different, though. You know, he sacrifices his – you know, his spot is mandatory because he's seeking to get out of the position he's in now so he can get to a higher position and he can be able to be in the picking grounds like the rest of these named fighters and stuff. It's same thing with Martin and Dornier. I don't care what people say. Dornier's not a household name. Neither is Martin.
Nope.
But by fighting each other, they're getting a bit closer to it.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll ever be that. You know, they're small guys. It's pretty rare unless you're like a, you know, Barrera Morales type guy.
But see, they need guys each other like that because Barrera Morales too, they weren't household names until they started fighting each other, and that's what got them in the mouths of people, in the eyes of, in the TVs of homes and stuff. So I always think that
sure.
A fighter needs the other guy to help them get to that point, and this could be a great rivalry between, you know, Mexico and the Philippines. So I'm trying Robert Guerrero one more time. If not,
Fernando Guerrero.
I mean, Fernando Guerrero.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic
voice messaging.
I don't know. Maybe he went in training or something.
They train a little late over there. So.
Yeah. So he might be a little caught up and stuff. Morris is the only acceptable opponent. You're absolutely – well, no.
I don't agree with that at all.
Like I even said, a Chris-John fight for Nonito
would
be an interesting fight, you know.
And I'm sorry, but Rigo has got a belt, right? Why isn't that an acceptable fight? That makes no sense. It's the only fight you want to see. That's okay, but it's the only acceptable fight to you. But, you know, I'm sorry, I'm a fight fan too.
Right.
I want to see Rigo versus Donaire. And, you know, that's just the way love goes. Well, let's take another call while we're waiting for Mr. Guerrero, who's probably not going to – I don't know what he's doing. Why don't we do that?
Yeah, fight fans, you want to call in and speak to us here on Leaving the Ring, Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen, 347-215-7598. You certainly can, and we'll talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. I got a lot of mail on our Gmail here. about the fights that we would want to see happen in 2013. What is one of the most anticipated bouts for ourselves? You know, a couple of people are asking for me to answer and for Gable to answer. And you know what? I was putting some thought into them. And I don't know. You know, I think one of the fights that we're talking about, Nonito and Abner Morris, even with Rigondeaux, it's absolutely one on the list. But there's a lot of fights that I think that are being made that would have been on the list, but they're already put down on paper. You know, and that's a good sign, I would have to say, to start off our 2013. You know, from Salido to Garcia. Sitting here just thinking, I don't know. I don't know of a fight right now. I'm not one of those that want to see the Marquez and Pacquiao fight. I don't know about yourself, Gabriel. I'm satisfied with four fights. If it happens, I wouldn't, you know, bitch and complain about it. But it's not something I would say it's needed in 2013. You know, I thought Marquez should just ride out in the sunset and retire and let it be. And if anything, Pacquiao, if anything, I think that Manny needs to go after Timothy Bradley. Give Marquez a rest. You know, I thought it was a bit rushed. Even the fourth time around after the third fight, I thought it was a bit rushed. I was like, what did you learn from the third fight? You know, to me, it seemed like they needed time to go to that drawing board to try to figure out the puzzle of Marquez. But now, and not even more so now because he's got Memo already on his side. But I think a fight with Timothy Bradley would make sense for him for 2013.
Yeah, I mean, it's you got to write that wrong. It's a nice storyline. I'm not sure what's going on with Tim Bradley. You know, I'm not sure what fight he wants. I think he thought he became Tiger Woods once he beat Tiger Woods, and it just didn't happen for him. And it's kind of weird. Here's a guy that basically had the biggest win of his life, and nobody's talking about him for Fighter of the Year. Nobody's talking about Tim Bradley, any sort of awards. Nobody's talking about Tim Bradley. It's weird. It's almost like that fight didn't happen, you know, in a sense. And I guess maybe it's you're only as good as your last fight, but have you ever seen anything like that? It's kind of like Trent Dilfer winning the Super Bowl and then getting cut the next year, you know? And some people are blaming Top Rank for it. I know they threw out boy, I got to turn off my Facebook. I just keep getting hit with chats. It's just like, dude, I'm live on the air. I cannot talk right now. I just totally blew my whole point. People are blaming Top Rank for what's going on with Tim Bradley. And, you know, I'm not sure if it's all his fault. I'm not that comfortable completely commenting on it because I'd like to know the whole picture. I'd like to talk to Tim and hear where he stands at this point. But it seems like there's been offers made and then fights kind of balked at, and Top Rank went, well, all right, I guess you don't want to fight this year. And so they've kind of shelved him. And that's kind of what happens when you don't take the opportunities. Is that Top Rank's bad? Like I said, I'm not really sure. I didn't want to see him fight Lamont Peterson again. It was a good first fight. It wasn't anything I ever needed to see again.
Exactly.
And certainly based on the Khan fight, it doesn't really tell me all that much, especially knowing that he had a synthetic testosterone pellet in his body. That's probably not going to be there if he fights Tim Bradley. I'm not really sure where you go with Timmy. I think you got to make the Pacquiao fight. I think that's a very solid option there. But for Manny, I mean, do you bring him back? It's hard to bring a guy back at that level on regular HBO in like a tune-up showcase fight to see if he's okay. Do you just go straight to a big pay-per-view again like that and hope that Manny can take a punch well?
See, that that's the big thing here, too, is that we don't really know how well he's going to receive a punch. And I think that's why it's important, in my opinion, you go after a Timothy Bradley who doesn't pose that major threat. Now, if Bradley's able to land that right, which he was able to do when they tangled, and he's able to rock Manny Pacquiao, then it tells us the full-fledged story of where his chin is at. And to me, it defeats the whole purpose of doing a fit fight with Marquez. Right now, what I think that for Manny and his people is to sit back and really think about, rather than rushing what they did already with the Marquez fight, is to rethink where they need to go to reestablish him and to really get his motivation back to par. Because what a big defeat like that. And this wasn't just like a defeat, man. This was not a Timothy Bradley, you know, loss. This was one that definitely changes a fighter's train of thought and damages a fighter's ego. And it could really set that bar. We've been saying this for, I think, like the past year or so, that we've seen sign of slippage of Manny Pacquiao. And I've had fans, you know, just come at me pretty crazy, saying we're crazy, we don't know what we're talking about, especially when we had both predicted there was going to be a knockout, you know, in when it was going into this Marquez fight. And now people are starting to see that there's more real to this than ever. And I hope that Manny and his camp kind of see that as well, that there's more real to that this guy could really end his career completely going into a fifth fight, if not thought out carefully and planned out correctly. We got Jose Ben Jr. that's going to be calling in. I'm just waiting for him to call in, and we can patch him in as well. And I'm going to get my thoughts here, my co-host, Gabriel. Go ahead, Gabriel.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting seeing what they do with Manny. I mean, he hasn't really said, I mean, I guess he said that he wants to come back, but nothing's really definite. I mean, he's probably going to have to go through a battery of tests to see if he's okay. People don't really take into account. I mean, I think these guys last forever, but Manny's got a lot of fights under his belt, man.
He does.
He's got a lot of wear and tear. I mean, he's moved up in weight classes. The Margarito fight, I think, took a lot more out of him than people realize. I mean, he's got 61 fights, you know. He's been knocked out now three times. Not TKO'd, but you know, knocked out. So it's going to be – actually, no, one of them is a TKO. But still, those are a lot of miles to put on a guy who's only – you know, he's 34 years old. That's not young for the smaller weight classes.
No, not whatsoever, you know.
You know, it's starting to get older. And we think of him as a welterweight now, but really, you know, he's a smaller guy. And at some point, punch resistance goes away. All those things that you're able to do, you know, all of a sudden you're not able to. Now, granted, that punch was like getting hit in the face with a baseball bat at about 2 inches away from you. But, you know, we'll see how he handles it. I mean, after Paul Williams came back from his brutal knockout loss, you could see, you know, there was a little bit of
slippage, yeah.
Yeah, there was definite slippage. So it'll be curious to see how Manny is, you know.
I'm really curious, you know, and I wouldn't be mad at him if he said, you know what, I'm just going to hang it up. I'm going to walk away as well, too. My health comes first. So I wouldn't hate on that at all, because he did give us a great run of fights, you know, and he did give us a good career in the lower weights when he fought, you know, Morales and Barrera and Marquez, you know. He left a good legacy and memory. We're going to pass in some fight fans, 347-215-7598, here on Leaving the Ring Radio. We had Orlando Salido come on, talked about his upcoming fight with Mikey Garcia, and then we had Gabriel Rosado, who's getting his fight on HBO against Gennady Golovkin, and we were hoping to get Fernando Guerrero with us to talk about Peter Quillins, the Kid Chocolate, and see what his thoughts were, but we're not having any luck. He's probably in training camp, so we'll try maybe a little later before the show ends. But let's patch in some fight fans. Rob Rigo, who wants to talk Garcia. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm excited about this, man. I got a couple buddies going, and we're going to head out there. We're going to make our way to the fight on this triple header. You know, I'm surprised that, you know, they put all three of them. It's a great way to start off the year, you know, with three solid, significant matchups, you know what I mean? I guess y'all hit the tee with the first two, but I'm almost wondering what y'all think about the first undercard, Martinez. I gotta slip my name. I was just looking them up right now. Martinez, the guy that Rocky Martinez is fighting.
The Puerto Rican kid, right? We're talking about.
Yeah, it's gonna be on the HBO triple header. So Rocky Martinez, Burgos, one called Burgos.
Oh,
I'm sitting here on mute, answering your question.
Yeah, Carlos Abagun, right?
Juan Carlos Burgos. I'm sitting here like totally, totally into that fight. Oh, great, I'm on mute. Ramon Martinez versus Juan Carlos Burgos. That's going to be a fun fight. Burgos is a guy that.
Thinking Abagun? Yeah, you're right. No, that is a good fight.
Yeah, no, that's going to be an all-action fight. These are two guys that are going to come forward, going to be at each other. Both can box a little bit, but both like to be aggressive. It's just a fun fight, you know. It's J.C. Burgos is a guy that anytime he's on the docket, I'm like, I'm in, you know. Let me see it. So, yeah, no, it's a whole triple header. I like this whole multiple fight cards. It reminds me of when we were coming up and we got to see all these good fights in one night. Enough of these like single fight cards, you know.
I like the fact that he's putting Rocky Martinez and Carlos Juan, because these are two guys that normally, you know, After Dark was supposed to be set up for guys like that, you know, all action. They didn't really bring a whole massive crowd, but they bring what we normally believe that is TV friendly. You know, Rocky always looks like he's at the verge of a loss, but he's able to come back and throw some heavy shots, you know. Juan Carlos has been a guy that's solid, but he's been on the short end of the stick, you know. So this is going to be a really good tone to set for the main event.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait. And also, hey, Gabe, you're wrong, man. Timothy Bradley, he was mentioned in some of the end of year awards. This is the robbery of the year. Yeah, y'all said he wasn't mentioning any of them, but it's a robbery. So about poor guy. I love Timmy. It's not his fault, you know. He was surprised, you know.
That's true. He was.
I think if when Timmy comes back, dude, that he's got to put up that old Master P song and stuff. It ain't my fault.
Yeah, poor guy. I mean, what's the guy supposed to do? Say, yeah, I lost. You know, I hope he comes up, makes a good comeback.
I just, you know what? For a guy that didn't get beat up and get knocked out, he really just kind of fell off the face of Earth for a minute, you know? When's the last time we've seen a fighter allow the fans to make you shoo away?
That's, you know... This is interesting. It's kind of funny. This guy's going after Memo Heredia. Memo's now saying that he doesn't work with Rigo. He said that today. And this guy is saying, this is Luis Ortiz underscore boxing NBA, so writer for that site. And he was sitting right in front of Memo Heredia, who I guess said in Spanish he was going to get revenge on Donaire by working with Rigo. And Heredia is like, what are you talking about? Because, dude, you said those exact words, and I was standing like right in front of you, and you were screaming and angry about it. So, kind of weird. Now Gary Hyde's coming out and saying that Rigo isn't working with Heredia, and they'll do VADA testing. This is why we need it across the board, not to kind of hijack your call, but just so we don't have this cloud of suspicion. Steve Kim brought this up. I thought it was really, really smart and an astute point. He talked about baseball and how everybody went after Bonds and McGuire, all the big names, Sosa, but... You know, there's a lot of baseball players out there that are probably using. And it's kind of like what USADA does, is like the trophy hunting. We need to get rid of that. And I've been away from, and Dave has too, away from this, well, Manny didn't take the test, so Floyd's clean and Manny's dirty. And this really weird cloud of suspicion based on really nothing. You can't point to anybody most people can't point to somebody in the Pacquiao camp and say, there's the drug man, he's got a history of it. He's near Pacquiao, blah, 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 there's a cloud of suspicion, and that's why. You can't do that. You can do that in Marquez's camp, and that's why it's happened, fair or unfair. But when you hire a Victor Conte or a Memo Heredia, you're going to have to deal with the baggage they bring with them, and it's a lot of baggage.
Right.
You know, I don't want to go into a whole thing with it, but if we do the universal testing and we get everybody on the same playing field in terms of that, we eliminate all clouds of suspicion. End of story. Bottom line, you could work with whoever you want to work with. You could work with Panama Lewis if you want. As long as you're doing drug testing, hey, you know, it's all good. So that's my last thing on that. But this is kind of funny. If you're following on Twitter, this Luis Ortiz at Ortiz underscore boxing NBA is pretty funny. He's going after Heredia pretty hard right now.
And rightfully so, man. You know, I mean, he said it in front of him, and now he's basically saying he's a liar. Come on.
It's just kind of funny. One more thing, Gabe. Quick before I jump off, man. I mean, this whole, you know, you stuck. You were one of the four front runners with this whole issue. You know, now, you know, it's everybody's taking note. You know, it's a really, really big deal. With the whole, everybody finally recognized at the end of the year, mainly because of the Pacquiao fight, you know, that was the main one. Do you see like this year being any more strict? I mean, because I think a lot of other fighters are going to jump on board. It's kind of creepy. I think a lot of them got creeped out.
Well, I think it did. It was kind of a chilling fight. But, you know, I saw an interview on Fight Hype the other day, and I don't go to that site because I just think they're like the Fox News of boxing. But
you mean the slow-mo?
Particularly informed, and I find it interesting that
it'll be great
in March it'll be literally 3 years. It'll be the anniversary of when I first wrote an article about performance-enhancing drugs. No, I think I wrote a couple mailbags right before. So, like, February, it'll be 3 years, right, that Floyd brought it up, I think, in January 3 years ago, and now here we are. And the title of the article, I think Percy Crawford, who actually I do enjoy his insight into boxing. He's a pretty astute guy. But in this case, it was interesting. Like, here we are on Max Boxing, right, and I'm just little me doing my thing. We have probably the least amount of access to Floyd Mayweather. I think it was up until a few, maybe four or five fights before, that Steve Kim wasn't even allowed to interview Floyd. Like, LRB cut him off in line and was like, nope, not going to get in there. So we have limited access to Floyd. Meanwhile, these guys are doing reality shows with Floyd, have complete access to the guy. They get exclusive interviews all the time. But answer this question as a fight fan. Have you learned anything about drug testing or the PED movement at all from a Fight Hype interview as compared to Max Boxing? And why is that? We don't have access to the leader of the PED movement. They have total access to the leader of the movement. He hasn't given an interview that's enlightening, that's educational. The Alex Ariza interviews, I've never learned a damn thing from any interview he's ever given. So I find it very interesting. But reading this interview was an interview with Jeff Mayweather. And I think the title of it was, you know, nobody cared about PED testing until Pacquiao got knocked out. Now, that's actually simply not true. I've been covering it for 3 years. I was banned twice last year for basically taking that stance. Well, at least one of the times I was. And then I got him back because I was proven right in what I was investigating. But here's the thing that people really need to know. That episode of The Fight Game, this is info that a lot of people don't have. Why I know this is because they were consulting me for the second episode way back in the spring during what I call the first wave of PED testing. They were consulting me as possibly a guest or who I thought would be an interesting guest to be on the Fight Game second episode, which was going to be all about PED testing. But then Bradley and the robbery happened with Pacquiao, and that episode became the scoring episode, and they pushed PEDs to the wayside. It wasn't until it became a big issue again, started writing again about Heredia leading up to the fourth Pacquiao-Marquez fight, that all of a sudden we had momentum, and the momentum began with the Garcia-Morales 2 fight. If you notice, that's when the second wave of things really started to – and that's when my ban was lifted, when everybody went, oh, that clause that he was asking about, that cease and desist, that actually is real. I'll be writing an article about it next week, and you'll be able to see it. But so even the premise – from Jeff Mayweather, that nobody cared until Pacquiao got knocked out, that simply isn't true. Jim had that show planned well in advance, earlier in the year, in the spring, and wasn't able to get it across until after Garcia Morales 2 happened. That's really the catalyst for that show, and then Heredia and all that kind of came along. There was other things in the interview. I thought it was interesting that Jeff Mayweather, who trained Roy Nelson, who just won, Roy Nelson's in the VADA program. Jeff Mayweather didn't appear to seem to know that, didn't even mention it. His own fighter's doing it.
I know that.
The funniest part, Jeff Mayweather talks about, yeah, I'm working with King Mo now and I'm bringing him back. Well, King Mo tested positive for Drostanolone, the same drug that Tarver tested positive for, was suspended for a year as well. Just find it all very interesting. And the interviewer, Percy, who's usually very astute when it comes to boxing things, just seemed way out of his depth having a conversation about performance-enhancing drugs and the testing, because those are three points that I would have just pointed out to Jeff Mayweather just off the top of my head.
Hey Rob, thanks for calling in. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
Okay, appreciate it, guys.
All right. Have a great year. Have a great year.
And you know, really quick, because we get – so many people that hit us up. We have Jose Benavides Jr. with us. I'm going to patch him in right now. I just want to put my two cents really quick, because we get a lot of people that go, hey, you need, you know, get this person on, and we do our best, you know. And one of the reasons why we don't sometimes get particular fighters or personalities on the show is because they rather go somewhere where they're not going to be asked, and they know they're not going to be asked the question that everybody's burning to hear the answer for. But I'm going to patch in Jose Benavides Jr. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, man? How's it going?
Doing good. Hey, Happy New Year's to you too, man. I'm glad to have you on. It's always fun when you come on the airwaves here with us. Hey, really quick, rumors. I got to get this cleared from you really, really fast. There's a lot of rumors out there that are saying or insinuating that you have left your father as a trainer, and You know, I want to know, is there any truth to that? I mean, or has there been any talk about you separating with your dad and moving on with a different trainer ever since the last performance where you got caught? And I want to talk a little bit about that. But first, I want you to answer that first question I had out there for you, brother.
No, you know, rumors are always going to be rumors. I know my dad's been training me since I was 6 years old. So, I mean, no, there's nothing. Me and my dad aren't separating, you know, it's just taking the holidays off. I mean, we're still going to be a team. Like I said, we've been there since, you know, 6 years old. You've been training me. So, I mean, rumors are going to be rumors. And, no, I'm not switching to a different trainer or going somewhere else.
What do you think that stemmed from, you know? Was it because, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, after that performance, which was, I mean, every fighter is going to have a certain flaw and you're going to get caught. And we were talking about this earlier about Rigondeaux. He got clipped. He got dropped. You know, we looked at it as, okay, big deal. This is where you're supposed to shake that off and then figure out where do you go from there and how do you become better. But you got dropped. You got caught. And I'm trying to remember the fighter that caught you. It'll come to me right now because I'm trying to think of the question of how to put it together and stuff. Do you think those rumors came about because you almost went into the hiding grounds? Like, nobody knew what happened to you. You weren't doing interviews. You weren't really talking much. Was that just something you needed to do, was to kind of just fall back in and kind of go into somewhere alone and find yourself?
You know, like I said, you know, I mean, it's boxing. Eventually, you know, everyone's going to get caught. You're never not going to, you know, not get hit. But, I mean, no, I just, you know, like I said, I just wanted to take the holidays off. I mean, I had, you know, the holidays, I hadn't spent really much time with my family and stuff. So that's why, you know, I kind of really didn't do interviews and all that because I just, you know, wanted to spend time with my family. So basically why.
I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, who you know very well. Cool, Gabe.
How you doing, man? Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you too, man.
How did assess your year? How do you feel the year went? You know, you fought so much in 2011, you know, like five times. You only fought three times last year. Was that enough time for you? Do you feel like you've made the right progression? Where do you feel right now?
You know, I feel that we're doing good. You know, so far everything's been going great. I ended 2012. Undefeated as well. So, I mean, that's our plans, you know, just keep training hard and, you know, keep winning fights. I actually fought, what was it, like three, four fights basically with just one hand. And my last fight I fought was basically with just one hand. So, I mean, I got caught with the lucky shot. I mean, every boxer gets caught, but, you know, the good thing is that, you know, I just keep going forward and training harder. So,
do you think this is the year that, you know, I would say, I think, and rightly, that you're still in prospect land. You're still right there. Is this the year that we see you start to transition into Contenderville and that you start to really move up in terms of opposition and moving towards regional belts and things like that?
Yeah, you know, well, I've had 3 years, you know, of getting my experience up to, you know, this fourth year, when I'm, you know, trying to look forward to train harder, get, you know, tougher opponents, you know, and get better fights, you know, and then start learning more. Hopefully, you know, one day be a world champion, how I said before, and, you know, I'm going to keep training hard till that day comes, so.
What do you think right now is the aspect of your game that you probably need to work on the most? I mean, I don't want you to, you know, give away your weaknesses, but there, you know, is there something like in particular that you feel you haven't quite given enough attention to that you would like to focus in on in 2013?
I mean, you know, you never stop learning. No boxer's perfect. I mean, I go to the gym, you know, to train. I go to the gym and, you know, you learn new things at the gym every day. So, I mean, I just want to, you know, I want to make everything better. You know, my jab, my body shots, my right hands, my uppercuts. You know, I just go to the gym and try to progress and be the best that I can. So, I mean, that's what we're going to start doing, you know, training hard and, you know, trying to get me better, you know, work more on my body shots, more on my jabs, and see what happens.
When you got caught with Miranda at the Home Depot Center and you were dropped, what went through your head? Was that a surprise to you, or go ahead?
Actually, when he caught me, he didn't drop me when he caught me. So,
oh, I'm sorry.
Like I said, he caught me with a lucky shot. I mean, it was the eighth round. You know, I kind of put my hands down a little bit. He caught me, but you know, he didn't drop me. I know. But, you know, like I said, it's boxing. You're going to get caught eventually. So, I mean, the good thing is that, you know, I ended up, you know, I didn't fall to the ground when he hit me, and I won the fight. So, I fought the whole, basically the whole fight with just one hand, and I just dominated him with just one of my left hand, so I mean.
Well, have you went back and looked at tape of that, of when he caught you, and going back and looking into that, what is your thoughts of what you did wrong?
You know, like I said, you know, he shouldn't have caught me. He caught me with my right hand was way too low, and, you know, like I said, it's boxing. Not every box is perfect, so he caught me with, you know, one of those desperate hooks, and he landed, but, you know, thank God that he didn't draw me or, you know, and I ended the night victorious, and I won the fight, so, you know, all I have to do is, you know, just put my hands up, put them up, and, you know, never have them that low. That's my mistake. You know, I had my hand a little too low, and, I mean, it was the eighth round. You know, it happens, you know, so. Just got to put my hands up, you know, not get too confident.
Yeah.
Was it for you? It wasn't a stamina issue. It wasn't. It was just one of those. You got caught. You had. It was that split second where you just lost focus, yeah. And boom, and that was,
yeah,
it.
No, you know, yeah, it wasn't. I wasn't really tired or anything. It was just that I put my hand down. You know me. I don't know why I did that, but, you know, like I said, it's boxing. You're gonna get caught eventually. And, you know, he got lucky and he caught me with that shot, just like that fight of Chavez and Maravilla. You know, Maravilla was winning every single round, you know, just got caught that last round. You know, it's just that split second, you know, a guy gets a lucky shot and he lands it, so.
Do you learn, I mean, when you're in a moment like that, I mean, I was there, and I remember just watching it. I mean, it seemed like probably the longest period of time that you've ever experienced in your life, having to get out of that round, and you were as hurt as I've ever, you know, seen you, or seen anyone hurt. What's going through? I mean, are you thinking, I just got to get away, I got to just waste time? Or, I mean, can you even think linearly during a moment like that? I mean, can you take us inside of your mindset, or did you want to fight back? I mean, what are you thinking?
I mean, like I said, you know, I got caught. I was still there, you know, when he hit me. I wasn't, like, if I was all, you know, knocked out or whatever. But a lot of people, I know, I see videos or whatever, people saying that I got saved by the bell, that I would have lost the fight. I mean, I could have still gone 12 rounds. I mean, I do 10, 12 rounds. So, I mean, it wasn't that I was hurt, you know. It was just I got caught with a good shot, but it wasn't, if the bell wouldn't have rang or something, it's not like he would have beat me. Like, you know, like I said, other people around there saying that I got saved by the bell or whatever. But, you know, like I said, it's boxing, and, you know, you just have to learn to live with it and go back to the drawing board and train harder.
Yeah, it happens. I think, you know, people kind of make, you know, the boxing fans are the most fickle on the planet. The guy loses, you know, I've even seen this week, you know, now that Freddie is, you know, lost, ever since the Pacquiao fight, well, Freddie Roach was overrated the whole time. He was never very good because he's just an offensive coach who never teaches defense and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, like, that's just rough,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
People kind of take things away. As soon as you showed a little bit of, oh, I can get hurt, all of a sudden, oh, he was never that good, even though everybody was, like,
yeah,
super high on you before. And, I mean, I've seen you train, you know, as the wild card when I was there. And, dude, yeah, nobody can question your work ethic. You're always in shape. I've never run into you anywhere and said, boy, Jose looks super fat. Like, wow, that's what he looks like between fights.
I like the fact that it happens.
I never see that.
You know, I got to tell you the truth. You know, I like the fact that things do happen like that, because I think you learn something from your early on. You know, I don't know. Do you think it's something that you need to learn early rather than later? You don't know what to do, and you were able to react correctly. You know, you were able to, you know, maintain yourself and continue on and not get dropped like you mentioned earlier, Jose. Or do you think that this is something that a fighter should learn later in their career?
You know, I mean, everything happens for a reason. I mean, now, you know, get more attentive, put my hands up more. I mean, I think it's better, you know, to learn, have that, you know, early in your career than have it like in a title fight or something. You get dropped and you don't know what to do, because I see a lot of good boxers out there that, you know, get caught with that shot and they don't know what to do after that. It just, you know, they don't know what to do. So I mean, I think it's good and a bad thing. I mean, it's not good, you know, to get hit like that, but if you're gonna get hit like that, you know what, you know what to do. If you're gonna hold on, you're gonna run the round,
I remember that. You know, and I apologize, you know, because it was a while back, and I hadn't had a chance to go back and rewatch the fight and stuff. And you know, because I remember I wanted to talk to you immediately after that, and you weren't doing any interviews at the moment and stuff, which is rightfully so, man. I mean, I don't think I would want to either at the moment, you know, spend the holidays and spend some time. You're in the face of the media and the public all the time, and it's you earn the right. You fight for a living. You earn that right to go, hey, you know what, I'm going to just a backward step for a moment and do my thing. And I remember I was tweeting about that, right, about your hand getting low. And I remember I keep tweeting out there that this is a learning process and this is something that needs to be corrected. And I think right after I tweeted that, that's when you got caught. And I remember a lot of people jumping on you down your throat about that, saying like, oh, you know, he would have got knocked out, he should have got knocked out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember tweeting out that this was a great learning process for you. This is great for not for just yourself, but for your whole team, so that you guys can go back and go, okay, we can't do this again. This is how you grow. This is not like a regular job, you know, where, you know, I'm a plumber by profession, you know, and if I bring a leak, it's easy for me to fix, you know, where your job is, you get caught with punches for a living, and it's a lot harder to you know, do things on the job and make them be corrected on the fly and stuff. But you did it. And that's something that shows a lot of poise. And I thought that, and I've always thought that you're going to do something, man. I really think that you have the tools to do it. You're an athlete and you definitely a specimen, and you showed that and stuff. Do you mind if we patch in some fight fans that want to talk to you really quick?
Yeah, no, fine.
Okay. Let's patch in Jimmy, who wants to get on the air and have a chance to speak to you, Jose. Go ahead, Jimmy. You're on live right now with Jose Benavides Jr.
Jose, hi. How are you doing?
Hey, what's up, man? How's it going?
Doing good. I want to tell you thank you for repping. I'm from Arizona. My whole family's from Arizona. I want to say thank you for just being a true champion for our state, our city, how you represent us. We couldn't be more proud of you. I need to say that first and foremost. And secondly, what I want to say is, obviously, we saw the whole fight. The whole family did. We were here. We watched everything. I think he was doing a great job dominating with his jab. Yeah, you know, he was just doing great. I think what needs to be said is, let's talk about how much heart and determination he showed that other fighters would have just, you know, they would have not even been able to continue after that. But Jose showed the poise, the heart, the warrior instinct to actually get up and continue and win the fight. And I agree with what you guys were saying earlier. That's a learning process, something you don't learn that in the gym. You learn that in the ring. And he showed his fortitude. He showed his warrior's heart. And we couldn't be more proud of him. And, you know, win, lose, draw, we're always going to be behind him just because he's a champion in and out of the ring. And I just wanted to say that on behalf of myself and my family. We're big fans.
Oh, well, you know what, man, thank you. I really appreciate, you know, you supporting me, everyone that's been supporting me. You know, I'm from Arizona. I just want to, you know, bring Arizona on the map, you know, and like I said, you know, really thank you a lot. That means a lot to me, you know, just everyone that's been out there since day one, you know, hopefully one day I'll be the world champion. So I'm going to keep training hard, and, you know, thank you. Thank you and your family for all the support.
Hey, and that's great, man, that your state is supporting you like that. I think that's really needed, especially for a young fighter. Like I said, Jose, I really believe it's a learning process. Just, you know, don't want to see you go through it again because there's only so many times you're going to learn from it, right?
Yeah, no more of that. You know, I have to go back to Jimmy, you know, put those hands up and, you know, keep working 110% harder, so.
So where do we go from here? When do we see you get back into the ring? And like you said, you already cleared the rumors about you and your father separating and you moving on. You said that's not a no-go. You're sticking with your dad, been with you from the beginning. What have you been up to?
You know, right now, like I said, we just took the holidays off, the family, you know, being with the family. But, you know, when it start working again and, you know, training hard and getting ready for the next fights that are coming up, so...
Well, there you go.
Has there been any? Do you have any idea which card they're going to put you on, or has anybody talked to you about that yet?
To be completely honest with you, I have no idea. You know, I have to just talk to my team about that. See what cards are going to be next, and you know where to fight, and you know, like I said, what cards. I don't know exactly when, but you know, hopefully soon. So.
Cool.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you get back into the ring, man. Hey, wish you
fantastic.
All the luck. And to you and your dad, and can't wait to see you get back in there and do your thing.
No, thank you, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate everyone that's been out there supporting me, and you know, you for letting me be on your show. You know, I thank you, and I'm gonna go back and keep training hard. And like I said, hopefully one day be a world champion.
Absolutely, brother. We look forward to it, man. Thank you again.
Thank you. God bless.
All right, man. Happy New Year.
Jose Benavides Jr. on leaving the ring and clears the rumors about him and his father separating and, you know, talks about a hard situation, you know. That's a tough thing to talk about, you know, when you get rocked and you get a lot of fans that are just kind of, you know, bagging on you about it and, you know, acting like that they could have worked through that. And, you know, it's the quarterback couch potato syndrome. And, you know, I know that's a tough thing to kind of, you know, speak on and be able to talk about it intelligently and learn from it, you know, especially at his age, a young kid, but he's doing a hell of a job. And like I said, it's a learning process and glad to hear that he understands it is a learning process. I can't wait to see what he does next on the next scheduled date for him to get back into the ring. Jose Benavides Jr.
Yeah, I think it's, like you said, I think it was a good thing that that happened to him. You know, that you've got to go through those in order to get to the promised land of being a champion. A champion is a guy that's been through the mill, that's been through everything, right?
Yep.
And if you haven't been through multiple experiences, you know, like Mikey Garcia is about to step up in class big time against Orlando Salido, who's pretty much seen it all at the world-class level. Those things, you know, you can't replace experience. You can't get that in the gym. You've got to get it in the ring on the big stage. So it's going to be interesting seeing him going forward with that experience and how he responds the next time.
I, you know, you when you look at matches like that, you look at them and it's a learning curve, but it's a tough learning curve, you know. It's a bruising curve that you're going to go through. And you really find out where you stand in time. You know, was this the time for you to step up or was this a time for you to lose to learn from it? And with Mikey Garcia, it's obviously that's the big question here, you know. And when you see young fighters like Jose Benavides Jr. get caught, get rocked, and got to go back to that drawing board and look at those tapes and look at himself, study himself, not what Miranda really did, but study himself and what he did, what he allowed the other fighter to capitalize on, that to me is the right way to build a fighter. You know, that's the way that a fighter is supposed to learn. Because when it comes to that point where they are in that elite category and you haven't been through those mills, that's when you see fight fans and media like ourselves, we start clawing up the wall because we're like, well, we've never seen him get in this certain zone. We don't know if he can last through some bombing zones. We don't know if he's going to step on a landmine on how he's going to react. With Jose Benavides Jr. and like Rigondeaux and other fighters like that that have been through that, Orlando Salido who got to that point, we know because we watched and we witnessed. Like a Robert the Ghost Guerrero, we watched and we witnessed. We saw what they do after if they get hurt or they're in a tough situation, how they react and how they adapt to it. And that's part of having an understanding of what that fighter, who that fighter is. And I like that process because I feel like I grow with them when they go through these turmoils.
Yeah, no, I agree. And another guy that's been through the mill, actually we're about to call him in right now, is Fernando Guerrero. Another guy that's been through some experiences, and I'm very curious to see what his experiences are going to translate into against Peter Quillen in this, you know, big title shot. Be interesting. I don't think this is exactly the way that Guerrero probably pictured getting his title shot, but it's going to happen nonetheless.
It's you know what, from Indam to now Guerrero, this is two different looks of styles that it's going to be fun to see how well he does and what his capabilities are. You know, these are some tough matches that he's being put in against for Kid Chocolate, and this is a big chance for Guerrero to shine. I'm interested in hearing what he's got to say and what he thinks about this matchup. You know, calling him in right now, Fernando Guerrero. Hopefully, I don't call him Robert by accident.
I know. Yeah, just be careful. I'm sure he gets that a lot in the Bay Area.
I bet he does, man. Let's see. And I'm calling him right now, and it's not.
Your call has been forwarded to an.
Well, let me try it again, because it didn't ring.
He's texting actively back with me.
Okay. Let him know. It's probably from a private number.
I did tell him that, yeah.
Yeah, so he's all prepared.
So there we go.
There we go. And Fernando Guerrero, we're going to get him on right now. He was at the gym. He got out. So,
hello?
Fernando. Is this Fernando Guerrero?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Doing good, brother. Hey, thanks for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. I'm Dave Duenas, and of course you know my partner, Gabriel Montoya from Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. First of all, I want to apologize because I was in the gym training and all, so sorry I missed your call.
Needed, man. No apology needed. You got a big fight coming up. We understand, and glad to hear that you're in there putting in the work for Peter Quillin. So my first question is, what do you think about this fight here? How much does this fight to you does it mean?
Well, it's ever since I've been a little kid, you know, that's what we've been doing. From the JOs all the way to the open class, all the way to, you know, my whole life, you know, the reasons why I missed my prom, the reason why I couldn't chill with all those people, the reason why I lived the way that I lived and didn't do a lot of stuff and couldn't have that enjoyment like other people did. That's why, you know, for this fight.
Absolutely.
When you head into this fight, first off, just break down what you see in Peter Quillin for me. What do you think of him as a fighter?
I think Peter Quillin is a champion. You know, I think he fought to become a world champion. You know, he's a young guy that is strong and a little quick and all that stuff. And you know, he has the cojones to get in that ring and fight. So, you know, you can't take nothing away from him. You know?
He's a really very confident guy. You know, and it's going to take a lot to get him out of there, to take that belt off of his waist now. Because I look at you two guys as kind of equally hungry. Your backgrounds kind of remind me of each other, and similar personalities, kind of bright, positive personalities. Do you think it's going to have to be a war in order for you to get that belt?
I would hope so, because every fighter wishes to have a legendary fight and all that stuff. You know, I would like my first world title to be a little bit a legendary fight. You know, because that's what we dream for. You know, we're gladiators and that's what we want. So he's not just gonna give me his belt. I'm gonna go to his house and try to steal it. You know, so once when he awakens, he's gonna find out that I'm trying to steal his belt. So that's how we're just gonna fight. We're gonna have that war.
Now you look at this, you know, your career since the Grady Brewer loss, and we've been over that. I mean, you're a 160, and you weigh in at 152 3/4. I mean, it just took a lot out of you, and you know, not to take anything away from Grady, but it is what it is. We'll just say that.
Yeah.
But you've had these four fights since. Do you think these four fights against Clyer, Nogler, Medina, and Candelo, are those fights the kind that would prepare you for this moment? Do you think you wanted to kind of continue that streak, or is this, you know, it just happens at the right time, and it's just the way it is?
Well, I would like to add in the Brewer fight too. I would like to add in the Brewer. Yeah, I would like to add in the losing experience, which it started it all. You know, I think that's one of the things that really people doesn't understand. You know, losing a fight either makes you or breaks you. It doesn't matter how hungry you are, you know, because there's other people out there as hungry. You could turn in the TV and you see other people that has it way worse than what I did as a child, you know? And you can't say, oh, I'm a nice guy, so I'm going to win. No, everybody else is – there's a lot of nice people out there too. So the thing is, it comes with talent, you know? The Brewer fight, it's a fight that I needed. It's a fight that I saw where all my friends, my really friends are. It's a fight that I'm like, you know, like I've always been the same. I could never see myself lose. I could never see myself even being hurt. And whether I was in the best condition or anything like that, I saw that it could happen with somebody that is not as talented as you. You know, so it opens your eyes and it makes you grow up as from a young man to a man. You know, so that's one of the most experience that I learned. You know, now I learned how to enjoy my life, work hard, and still stay hungry with somebody that is even least or even better than you. You know, you got to stay hungry with everybody because every dog has their day, you know.
Looking at your guys' resume, I mean, do you think that you guys are kind of similar in terms of guys, of how you guys been matched up with, but where his step up was when he had to face Endom, and your step up would obviously have to be Peter Quillen. Do you think that's the right assessment?
Yeah, I think so. I think that we've been brought up the same, and his step up, you know, and let's not take nothing away from his other step ups. I think him fighting, Winky Wright was a big step up too, because I actually didn't pay attention to the fight. I was watching it live, and I didn't pay attention to it because, you know, like I would never think that it would have been this close
right
for me and Peter to fight. But that was a good fight too. You know, that's a big step up. You can never take away Winky Wright, you know. And then now me, you know, like, I fought Rosado. Nobody gave me any credit, but now they do because he's fighting for a world title. I fought Jesse, and nobody gave me credit because he didn't do anything. But then when he fought Jermaine, everybody said, that he's a good opposition. I fought other people that, you know, like...
You took out Michael Walker in two rounds. Nobody takes out Michael Walker in two rounds.
Yeah, and then those are guys that, you know, that they could punch, and they're super middleweights that go down and all that other stuff. So, you know, those are fights that you can't – in the boxing world, you go by people's record and what they've done. But there's other people out there that do a lot. And just like Rosado, he's been fighting the top guys, getting knocked down, getting hurt, getting loses and all that stuff, and then now he's going to fight for a world title. You know, so my step up is everybody that I fought.
Right.
You know,
everybody
that I fought, I learned something, you know, from all of them.
Yeah. You had a great streak. I mean, you know, Ozzie Duran, who gave, you know, Brandon Gonzalez all he can handle, you know, Issa Smith, good names there, good resume. I want to go back with Peter Quillen in his Endom fight, which was an exciting fight, and it showed a lot about him. What did you see about him that you obviously look at it and go, okay, if he fights me this way, I can capitalize on it? Or do you expect a completely different Peter Quillen, a more calm and collective guy? We've seen him like when he fought Jesse Brinkley, or a tentative fighter the way he was against Endom in those early rounds?
Well, it depends on what I do. That's what I think,
mm-hmm.
You know, because people, this is the thing about me. I don't try to disrespect anybody. So I give everybody their respect. It's way different when you watch somebody in the ring or on TV. And then when you go in the ring with them, it's way different. You know, so what I do is I don't really watch fights. But I watch them when I'm going to get ready for them. So now I'm watching a little bit of Peter Quillen's fights. And every time that you step in that ring is different, because if people, like for instance, I was a guy that was a big threat for everybody, you know, but you lose one fight, whether because of the weight or anything, people don't care, you know. And then they judge you for that fight.
Right.
So anybody that watches that fight and judges me there, and then they get in the ring with me, they're going to get whooped, you know?
yeah,
you know? Like, I'm glad I want everybody to judge me from that fight, because whoever judges me from that fight and doesn't watch any other fight, watches the one that I lost, you're going to get whooped, because I'm not just a fighter No, you know, like, I know my capabilities. I know what I can do. I know deep in my heart that you know how sometimes people say that, oh, I'm better than him, you know,
right.
Because you have to say it. But now I'm not just saying it. Like, I feel like I'm great. I feel like I'm better than everybody in my weight class, you know. So now what I got to do is in February the 9th, is just demonstrate it. Not say it. I don't want to say it anymore because I believe in myself. But now I got to show everybody else how great I am.
Well, yeah,
that's
so
what I'm
going
to do. So
yeah.
Right.
It's interesting too. Is you talk about you've learned from everybody that you fought with, but you've also worked with several trainers. And you worked with Funes for a while. You were down here in L.A. And now you're up north working with Virgil Hunter. Talk about that kind of progression and the kind of tools you've added. I had the chance to watch you and Brandon Gonzalez work out and spar down here in L.A. And I always marvel at your technical abilities. Your feet are some of the quickest. And your ability to, like, I don't even see you begin to take a step. You kind of just leap from spot to spot. There was one particular moment where you were in the corner. I was just like, good Lord, this guy can move. So what have you learned with Virgil? What has he done with your game?
It's just patience. And then the thing is like, as a young child, nothing was given to me, you know, being a different type of Hispanic person, a Black Dominican, that when you come to America, you don't get categorized as a Hispanic because they're not used to it or anything. So it's just, So it was just hard for me to grow up and fit in with a lot of people. So one of the things is it's like, you know, when a race, I always wanted to be in the back. So then I had somebody to push me so then I could go to the front. So what I'm trying to get to is I don't know. It's like every time I've always had to push myself. So by pushing myself, I had to put myself down. No, I'm not good. Man, When I fought those fights, when I started fighting, I had 9 straight knockouts, and all those 9 straight knockouts, I swear to God, I told my dad for the first time, I went into
I'm going to have to – I'm sorry, brother. There was something wrong. I don't know what happened. It was just – it started spazzing out and stuff. Can we pick up to when, you know, those first 9 knockouts and then you spoke to your dad? What was it that you said to him?
Oh, yeah. No, like when I had my first knockouts and all that stuff, like I told my dad, I'm like, this is what I do. Like, I need to, like, put myself down so I can train harder. And then, like, when I knocked the dude out in the first round, I went to the parking lot and I started crying because I felt like I wasn't good enough, like I needed to be good enough. And he was
right.
Like, "Are you crazy? You just knocked him out like in the first round." But I was like, it was just not good enough, and it just held me back a lot, you know, because I always had to put myself down to get better and get better. But then now when I started moving around. I started sparring, you know, with those Brandon Gonzalez and Kelly Pavlik and Paul William and all those guys. I started realizing, like, I'm like, hey, this, like, I am good. Like, this is kind of too easy for me right now. Like, I am good right now, you know? So I don't need to keep putting myself down. I need to start appreciating my skills. I need to start appreciating who I am. I don't need to put myself down no more, you know? So, and that's when the point that I'm in right now, like, I've been through different trainers. I've seen a lot. I went all the way to Puerto Rico. I went all the way to New York and everything, just searching and seeing, you know, because I can't settle for less. I got to settle for the best right now.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, like, with Coach Verge, like, even what he told me, he's like, man, I can't teach you how to box, man. You got it. You know, it's just little things that I need to tweak in, little things that I want you to do, and that's it. But you got it. You're a world champion. So, and hearing that, not from him, but from all the coaches, I feel good. And I'm like, you know what? Like, you're right. All it is just my time. You know, and I feel like.
You needed that self-belief in yourself, right? And that's what it sounds to me, that's what you needed. You needed to be in that place of saying, I believe in me. And I honestly believe that when a fighter does that, where they truly believe in themselves, they become a much dangerous fighter.
Yeah, it's so easy right now. You know why? Because I truly, honestly believe that I can lose. You know, I honestly, not taking anything away from Peter, but there's no way that I can see that he could beat me. No way. Like, I have 19 knockouts for no reason. So that doesn't mean. I mean, I have 19 knockouts. So it speaks for itself. And then the thing is, he has 20 knockouts. So now, speed and agility and everything, I can't see it. Like, even like when Coach Berg said, Fernando has to go to a total meltdown to see. He can't see it either. I cannot see that guy beating me, you know, because I'm way better. If you're going to lose to somebody just because they punch hard, you're not supposed to be in the game anyway.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Let's face it. I'm talking to you, and I'm telling you. You know, you seen me and you seen Peter Quillen. Technique wise, doesn't have it. He has the grits, and he has the punching power to take people out there and all that stuff. You got to give it to him. But other than that, what else? You know. And I feel like he's. I talked to him. He's a good guy and everything. But. I really can't see him beating me.
Man, interesting. I can't. You know what? Just hearing you talk, I just want to see. I kind of hope the fight was happening this Saturday.
Yeah, seriously, I cannot wait. I mean, I think it's an exciting fight, and it kind of gets you back to the East Coast a little bit too, where because you were fighting.
Oh man, that's
your fight.
That's where all the fight needs to be. And then the funny thing about it is like people tend to forget a lot, you know, of like not bragging on myself, but the thing is people tend to forget, like, I am from the East Coast, you know. Peter Quillen is from Brooklyn, so it's nice that we're fighting in the East Coast. But last time I heard, I was the one that had like all those people in a little small town, and we're fighting. And finally, we're fighting in the place that I've always wanted to fight, where all my Dominican people are and everything. The only way that you can stay humble is by not seeing how big you are, and not seeing how many people support you, because you got to appreciate everybody.
Right.
And the thing is that as long as one Dominican is out there with a flag, I feel like it's a million for me. But I know that there's a lot of people supporting me. I know that the boxing industry, you know, you can't go by that, you know, because anything could happen. But, you know, they in boxing industry, they hype whoever they want, you know.
It's
That's
like, very true.
Oh, man, this guy's great, you know, just like when I was going to fight Golovkin. And they wanted me to fight him or whatever, and I was a contender to fight him. And they picked Rosado to fight him, which is a person that I beat. And then I just don't understand it. Like, this guy comes from the amateurs. We've never seen him fight, but he's the most feared fighter. But I'm like in his face, like, I'll fight you.
Yeah.
You know? But
well, it's always
but
funny.
Martinez
did the same thing. You know, nobody wants to fight me, and Pirog's yelling, I'll fight you. I'll totally fight you. And they just never, well, but that guy doesn't make any money, so we're not going to fight him. It's always business. Yeah. I've always wondered
about your
career, too, that why you don't fight at East Coast.
Yeah. So listen to this, you know. This is for the world title fight.
Right.
You know? And it's my dream, and it's bigger than boxing for me. It's all those people in Salisbury, all those kids that believe in me, all those people in Dominican Republic. When has declared a Dominican Republic champion or this and that. You got the Filos, you got the Mexicans, you got the Puerto Ricans. So for me, it's bigger. So when my brother calls me and he's like, "Hey man, how much are you getting paid for that fight?" I'm like, "Listen, I don't know, but I know as soon as I win this fight, we're not gonna have a problem. But listen, I don't need this. I don't need to know how much money I'm fighting to give me an extra motivator. I don't need that. I don't care. I don't want it. I don't care. You know, all I want to do is make that history right now. I remember when I was in Salisbury, and they went and once when I got done beating Rosado, they were like, "Fernando, we're leaving right now. Where do we leave your check?" And I'm like, "Listen, I'm not done fighting right now. I need to sign all the people's autograph. You know." So for me, it's like, who cares, man? I mean, I came in Dominican Republic. I was grown with a, I mean, I was raised up in a donkey. You know, that's what we rode. So if this right here is just the icing on the cake. You know, I'm having a blast. I don't have no problem with anybody. Peter Quillen is just a business part of it. He has a great story. I have a great story. That means that we're both gonna make it. You know, we're both gonna make it. He has the world title, and I just won. I won it. You know, so once when we get in that ring, you know, I know that he's not gonna give it to me, so I'll take it. You know.
Yeah, I remember that. You told me our first interview together. You talked about carrying water when you were like 9 years old for like miles, because that's the only way you could get water is like carrying it in a bucket. And
yeah,
you've been through some things.
No electricity, no nothing. So I know. Listen, this is why people doesn't understand. When I say something, I do it. So I guarantee you, once when I win this title, I don't know if the whole Dominican Republic is gonna be. But I guarantee you, you hear it from me. As soon as I win this title, in my hometown, in that area of Dominican Republic, Fernando Guerrero is going to bring electricity to them, because it's bigger. You know, it's not the money, it's the publicity. It's not just boxing. It's what you can do. There's other things. Like, for instance, that's how I got all my peoples. You know. All those viewers and everything with me riding bikes and running and going to the schools, because it's not about just the boxing. Boxing is what opened the door for me. So now, if I could do that, it would be a blessing for me, because that's the real reason why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because as a kid, I promised God, you know, I told him, once help me, help you. You know, help me, help you. Once when I get to this point, and that's the only way that I will fail. I will fail if I'm one of those. I will fail if I'm that champion making it rain in the club when I can make it rain. when I can make it rain to all my people. You know.
Right.
That's why I would like to make it rain.
Yeah, I can hear. I can understand that, man. I mean, it's been a long road for you. So I'm very excited when I heard this fight, because of the things you said. That Quillen's got power. He's tenacious. He believes in himself, and he's tough. But technically, I think you're the more skilled guy. And so it's going to be very interesting. I think it's a very interesting matchup.
This is a great matchup.
It's a crazy matchup, because you don't see those type of matchups, you know? Like, we're both looking young, but we're both hungry. And you know, those are the times that they're trying to save us. And we'll fight when we're, like, 30 years old or something like that. But we're not. You know, they're putting us right now. And it's a great matchup. You know, when we saw each other, we actually saw each other. We're like, "Hey, man." And then Peter Quillen touched his heart, and he was like, "Man, like, all respect to you and all that stuff." And we just posed up for the picture. That's all we did, you know?
And I like this. I like the fact, too, that your two fighters are trying to be heroes to your guy. You know, when we've had Peter on, he's, you know, talked about being of Cuban descent and how he wants to be a star for that. And then having you on, talking about the Dominican, you know, I think that brings more value to this fight now, even more, you know, hearing you guys both speak.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, I got a lot of people. It's just not, I mean, Dominican Republic needs the most help. But when those kids in Salisbury and those other kids everywhere, those kids in L.A. I'm going to L.A. right now, and all these people are meeting me in L.A. Like even this boxing gym, the West Side Boxing Gym, there's the kids in there that I'm telling them, like, I'm like, listen, be patient. Stay in this sport. Don't get a job. Because once when you get a job, you're gonna miss out on that boxing. You're
right.
Getting a career right now. All those kids are looking for that hope, and I need to show them. I can't just talk all the time. Talking is cheap. I need to show them, hey, this is what you get when you win. This is what you get when you train hard. This is the reward right here. And then I bring them the belt.
There
that's
you
the
go,
thing, man.
When you have something to fall back on, you probably will. It's the truth. You remove that safety net, and you have to. It was something you said to me. I just pulled it up in your first interview. You said, "I'll never forget that growing up in the Dominican Republic. You never forget working in the field at 4 years old, being hungry, and growing your own food. If you don't grow it, you don't eat. It's the same thing about your career. If you don't grow it, who will?" So I'm super excited for you, man. Super excited for you.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thanks. You know.
And yeah, absolutely too. I'm sitting here, and I thank you for taking the time to speak to us here on the radio. It was a lot of fun to finally have a chance to interview Fernando. So you're heading out to LA. So are you training in the Bay? Is that where you're at right now?
Yeah, I'm here in the training house right now in Hayward. My father's here and we call him Nacho. He's here with me. I met him in the boxing gym, in the West Side Boxing Gym, and I'm like, hey man, just, you know, because you need to be comfortable. So put my father in there, another Hispanic around me,
right.
And it's good.
Absolutely. I got to make my way down there to go see you and Brandon Gonzalez. Hey, Fernando, thanks again, man, for taking the time. It was a lot of fun. I'd love to hear. I loved everything that you were saying. I wish you all luck. Can't wait to see you and Peter go at it and who becomes the victor out of that fight, man. Wish you all the best.
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks a lot. And all the viewers that are listening, I want to tell them that Fernando's here to stay. You know, it's a hard sport, you know. Peter Quillen is a cool guy, and support both of us. You know, we're gonna try to give everybody a great show. We're both hungry, you know. So it's a win-win situation for me because I think that, you know, we're just gonna put it out there, you know, and just let the best man win, you know. That's all.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to pick sides or anything. If you like him, you like him. You know, that's cool. And if you like me, you like me. That's even cooler, you know. So, so it's all gravy, you know.
Right. Absolutely, brother. Okay, again, thanks again, man. I appreciate it. Can't wait to see you get in the ring.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you, man. Okay.
Have a good night. Happy New Year.
Fernando Guerrero, finally we had a chance to talk to him, get him on the air with us. He was in training camp in the gym, getting his work and his preparation ready for his fight with Peter Kid Chocolate Quillen. Just hearing him talk in this interview and hearing him express himself from his first loss and being had to build himself back up and believing in himself, and at the same time how he wants to represent for his country, for his countrymen, and to help them out, it made that this fight to me, in my opinion, for me, it made that this fight just that much more special, you know, just that much more where I want to see it. And I like fights like that. I like fights that where guys are going in and they you know, they're fighting not just for themselves, not for just their legacy, but for their country, you know. It tells a whole lot, you know, and like that quote he said that he had given you, Gabriel, for Max Boxing in the interview about, you know, picking and you know, if you've never picked before. I picked as a little boy. I had to actually do the walnuts. I had raked them all the way in the middle, and they came out and stuff. And that's a tough job in itself, man. If you can get past working out in the field, you can get past anything in life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I come from farmer stock. I exactly know exactly what he's talking about. It's, yeah, I mean, there's a kind of hard work that you get, that physical labor, the strength that you get from that is is something that just carry with you your whole life. Now, I'm very, when I heard it, the fight, I was like, stylistically, it's a very interesting matchup. And then when you look at the intangibles, it becomes even more so because of the heart and the determination of both guys, because they both come from hardship, and they both, they just have a kind of similar personalities. I'm just really excited by it, you know. And I love middleweights. Like, welterweight's probably my favorite, but middleweight's right there. I mean, they're both my favorite divisions. And anytime there's a top level fight, like you said, two young guys who are both hungry, it's gonna be an awesome fight. It's a tough first defense for Quillen. I'm actually very impressed by it.
I am too. You know, I mean, it's not the defense.
It's not what I expected.
Yeah, it's not a defense I would have went after right away for Peter Quillen. But you know, kudos to him. Hats off to him. I think he's trying to prove from the past, you know, the criticism. He's trying to show, like, hey, I got the belt now. I'm gonna defend it. I'm gonna be a champ. I'm gonna show you exactly what I used to, talk. I'm gonna walk it. I'm gonna do the walk, not just the talk. And I like that. You know, it definitely changes your perspective of the guy, and see, everybody hits me up on Facebook or on Twitter. Anyways, let's get to the fight schedule here. I'll leave the ring.
That's what I wrote. it's pretty short, dude. January 4th, Friday, 2013, at the Magic City Casino in Miami, Florida, which is ironically, my room is actually called the Magic City.
I thought you were that's not the first time you've heard. It's too short, dude. It's too short.
Wow. That's like magic. It's because you don't. ESPN2, Rancis Bartholomew, 17-0, versus Arash Usmani, 20-0. Battle of undefeated. Somebody's O must go. I'm not making a pick in this one. I'm leaning towards Bartholomew, although, boy, he was pretty stinky the last time I saw him. I
to say that he did.
Yeah.
So,
sweet.
If I remember correctly, the last fight, his footwork just looked, I don't know, it didn't seem like it was there. Didn't look like he was able to get his feet underneath them.
He had footwork. Speaking of not really there,
Bambi won in that fight for some reason. No, could be wrong.
Yeah, it's a funky fight. Jonathan Gonzalez, 15-0-1, versus Derek Ennis, 23-3-1. I believe Ennis did not make weight by 6 pounds. This fight might be in some sort of jeopardy, but I've been doing a radio show, so I haven't been able to follow up on it. But from what I saw on Twitter, I think it's still on. So that is your weekend fight schedule. Pretty short, right?
Yeah, short and sweet, and good to start it off. Glad to see ESPN Friday Night Fights back up and running. It's one of my series that I've missed the most, next to The Walking Dead.
Which sometimes actually they're the same show.
Exactly. You know, well, are we talking about Teddy Atlas, or are we talking about the fights?
Talking about the opponents. He's actually more solo boxeo has become definitely The Walking Dead. Hopefully, all of these shows, you know, that are the regular weekly things, really kind of pick it up in 2013. That's another thing I would like to see more of. And here we are with, you know, these fights are Derek Ennis is a solid opponent for Jonathan Gonzalez coming off that disappointing draw. Rancis Bartholomew. I don't know much about Arash Usmani, so. Like I said, I can't really make a big pick, but you got two undefeateds. Usually somebody's record is a little bit built. You can ask Sweet Boxing. I'm sure he's seen both of these guys multiple times. I'm excited to have Friday Night Fights back. You know, there's something to do again on Friday besides, you know, go out and have fun. So, Dave, I think we're at that time. 7:47. It's amazing. That time flies. We actually got in all our interviews. I'm looking forward to next week. Won't tell you who our guests are, that way we don't get scooped, but they should be pretty exciting if everything works out.
Yeah, definitely. We're working on working hard for this 2013. I am putting on YouTube some of the best that we did in 2012. Going through it, I mean, man, we had so many interviews. We kind of fell off towards the end of the year, and I know that. You know, I don't need you to point it out. You know, with the life itself and illness and just things popping off, it was a good rest for us because we're really full charge of going back to what we do best for Leaving the Ring and for our listeners. And like I said, with the Ustream, idea that we have, we're going to go full force. We're just, you know, correcting some of the stuff that we weren't able to project out the way we wanted to in the beginning, especially with the first one at Extreme Boxing. And even with that, and Henry's, you know, we weren't able to do everything because we were still learning in that learning process, just like these guys.
And on site is a lot different than, I mean, we could do this probably every week if we did it at our houses because we're all set up for it at home, webcams and everything, great sound and all that. But to do it on location is a totally different animal. It's just you're at the mercy of wherever you're at. You know, that the one we were trying to do up north, I traveled all the way up there, and then we get there, and it's like, we're in a brick building that's not going to be able to get internet.
Yeah.
You know, a cinder block house. But, yeah, I'm excited, man. I'm not going to say we're not going to take breaks throughout the year or even at the end of the year again because they're going to happen. It's a hard grind doing 3 hours a week and doing it week in, week out, especially with other lives. Yours is – you actually have a family. You know, I'm an orphan child living alone in Los Angeles with cats. So things are a little easier for me, but things get busy for you.
It gets
so,
both. I mean, both of us, you know, where things get hectic and stuff, schedule, and, you always have something that you're – following up and investigating and stuff, but we're gonna do our best. That's the point we're trying to make. We're gonna do our best. And I think a lot of you guys are gonna be happy, and it's gonna be a lot of fun. When we announce where that gym's gonna be at, we're gonna broadcast live. We definitely want to see some listeners come down and hang out with us and chop it up and have a chance to get a chance to for them to meet the fighters face to face, like in a meet and greet, which we didn't really push for the first two shows, but there was a minor meet and greet and stuff. But we're excited.
Yeah.
Excited to bring in some other new things that we have in the works and plans. Like always, we're always trying new stuff. You know, we're the guys that like to try to jump out the airplane without a parachute.
Yep, that's very true. Yeah, so I think I'm excited. It's going to be hopefully a fan day on some level, even if it's just a Ustream and you get to see all these guys from this particular stable. But, I'm really excited to kind of give back this year. We've chock full of a lot of ideas heading out of the year, so it's going to be fun stuff, Dave. I'm looking forward to 2013. I think it's going to be an even bigger, more exciting year than 2012, which was an absolute roller coaster. So
the big question is, who do you guys think you're going to piss off this year? I don't know. I'll let you know it in the third month of the year. How about that?
Actually, yeah, I already know the answer to that question.
I know Memo's. We pissed him off already. who else? I don't know. We'll find out, man. Anyways, hey, everybody, have a great night. Have a great weekend with your family. Don't drink and drive. Why? Because you might spill your beer. And Gabe, I will talk to you later, brother.
Cool. All right, man. I will catch you next week. And everybody out there, peace.